From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And here he comes now, Greatest Honor, finding his best ride right when he needs to. And he's going to run down, drain the clock, to win the Fountain of Youth.
The Fountain of Youth was another step that we wanted to try to pass. And, you know, Saturday in the Florida Derby will be another one. I think maybe the races are starting to play into our hand a little bit now for Greatest Honor. Going 1.8 should suit him a lot better than 1.16 here on his short pole. So, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of getting him stretched out. But my philosophy is, unless we think we deserve to be there, we won't be there.
Mike Stidham, who joins us, first ever runner in Dubai. And the horse himself, just tell us a little bit about how he's shipped over. It must be quite a long journey from where you are.
It is. It's a long trip. And, you know, as a trainer, you always worry about all the things that can go wrong. And so far, it's been really good. The horse has come over here, and he really seems like he's flourishing and thriving on everything that's going on. The weather's great. The accommodations are amazing. So he's doing fantastic.
But Collaborate, he's running up the score. Look at him go. Collaborate, the son of Into Mischief, will break his maiden in style, turning more than a few heads in the process. Collaborate, long gone. He won by almost 10.
I think I like everything about him. There's not much to dislike him. He's a grand-looking horse. You look at him, and the way he stands and his presence, the height, his size, when he works. I mean, he's everything. I think he's most definitely the most talented horse that we've ever had in our hands. His ability is... there's a lot of ability.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Certainly no shortage of great racing coming up later today. Gulfstream hosting an outstanding 14-race Florida Derby Day card, while halfway around the world, the Dubai World Cup program is already underway, as contenders for the Godolphin Mile are set to enter the starting gate in less than 15 minutes, with the main event, the $12 million Dubai World Cup, scheduled for 12:50 Eastern Time. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to another five-star edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and all presented today by our friends at Keeneland Select. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next 3 hours this morning, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, and plenty of Florida Derby and Dubai World Cup conversation coming up on today's show. But I wanted to begin by taking time to remember a couple of folks who will have a lasting impact on our sport. And I don't think there's any doubt that this year's Dubai World Cup is being held with heavy hearts after the passing of Dubai's deputy ruler, Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who died this past week at the age of 75. Sheikh Hamdan was a titan in the world of thoroughbred racing. His blue and white silks have been carried to victory in many of the most prestigious races around the globe, and his tremendous contributions to the sport will never be forgotten. Racing has truly lost a great friend and a wonderful ambassador. And later in the show, you're going to hear from trainer Kieran McLaughlin, who spent nearly three decades as part of Sheikh Hamdan's Shadwell family. He will reflect upon Sheikh Hamdan later in the first half of the show. This was a difficult week for racing. Not only did we lose Sheikh Hamdan, but we also lost a great human being in jockey Larry Melanson, who passed away Thursday at his home in Louisville at the age of 65. Larry, who retired in 2010 after riding more than 2,800 winners, had been battling health issues following a stroke that he suffered in 2017, and was regarded not only as an outstanding jockey and a great horseman, but a great person. He also will be missed, and we remember Larry Melanson on this Saturday morning. My thoughts, my prayers going out to those two families and everyone who knew and loved Sheikh Hamdan and Larry Melanson. Well, the road to the 2021 Kentucky Derby is quickly coming to an end. Hard to believe. You know, it seems like just yesterday I was giving you the countdown and we were over 100 days to the first Saturday in May. Now we are just 35 days, 10 hours, 40 minutes, and 16 seconds away from the Run for the Roses. Of course, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. again here in 2021. Very proud and privileged to say that, that it comes your way in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports Audio Network. Three points races are set for later today. You have the Kirtland Florida Derby at Gulfstream, the UAE Derby in Dubai, and the Jeff Ruby Stakes later today at Turfway. Greatest Honor is going to be a heavy favorite in the Florida Derby as he looks for a fourth consecutive win for Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee. 11 horses were entered, including the last horse to defeat Greatest Honor, Known Agenda, for trainer Todd Pletcher. And in the history of the Florida Derby, no trainer has won more than this year's Hall of Fame nominee, Todd Pletcher, who has settled a record 5 winners in that race. Oh, and by the way, is there anyone who is going to vote against Todd Pletcher getting into the Hall of Fame his first time on the ballot? Todd Pletcher not getting into the Hall of Fame this year would be one of the more monumental shockers that we have ever seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing, in my opinion. I get a vote for the Hall of Fame. He was on my vote list, no doubt about it. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Right, you know, if he doesn't get in, that's right up there with Upset beating Man of War, Onion beating Secretariat, and our Kong winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. No way Todd Pletcher is not putting on the jacket and accepting his spot in the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. Now, history also tells us that if you want to win the Kentucky Derby, you're in the right spot at Gulfstream later today. No prep race has produced more winners of the Kentucky Derby than the Florida Derby. 24 horses have come through that race before winning the Kentucky Derby. The last horse to do it, Always Dreaming, in 2017, who was trained by Todd Pletcher. Now, Shug McGahee, he's no slouch either. He saddled a Florida Derby winner en route to getting the roses a few weeks later. That's Orb in 2013. So he's looking for lightning to strike twice this year with Greatest Honor. And speaking of notable trainers who are represented in this year's race, how about 6-time Kentucky Derby winner Bob Baffert, who, believe it or not, let this one sink in for a minute, is going to be saddling his first ever Florida Derby starter when he sends out Spielberg later today. Let that sink in. Of all the success that Bob Baffert has had, dominating not just the Kentucky Derby, but the Kentucky Derby prep races, he has never saddled a horse in the Florida Derby until today. And according to the folks at Gulfstream Park, Spielberg will be just the 22nd starter all time at Gulfstream Park for Bob Baffert. But I can tell you this, when Bob does ship to Gulfstream, and you could say this about a lot of venues, when he does ship to Gulfstream, he usually means business. His very first Breeders' Cup win came at Gulfstream. The 1992 Breeders' Cup Sprint, little horse by the name of 30 Slews. That's what kind of launched Bob Baffert's career. He had Arrowgate and Mucho Gusto, who won the 2017 and 2020 renewals of the Pegasus World Cup, respectively. So when he comes to Gulfstream Park, he means business. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Bob Edwards of E5 Racing to talk about his exciting Florida Derby contender, Collaborate, who can take trainer Safi Joseph Jr. back to the Kentucky Derby for the second consecutive year with a victory today, even a second-place finish today. You'll also hear from Gulfstream analyst Ron Nicoletti as he previews the stakes races on that loaded card in South Florida. Don't forget, the Rainbow Pick 6 has a mandatory pool estimated to be over $7.5 million today. The late pick 5 guaranteed at $750K, as is the late pick 4. Poll question for today pertains to the Florida Derby. This poll question presented by OwnerView in the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. It's a prop bet, if you will. Who wins today's Florida Derby? You have two choices. That's it. You can take the heavy favorite, Greatest Honor, or you can take the field. What do you think? Is Greatest Honor that good? Is he good enough to take him in a prop bet against the rest of the field? So who wins today's Florida Derby, greatest honor or the field? You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. You can email the show as well if you have some comments on that, mike@horseracingradio.net. So here's what's coming up this morning, 8:15, just about 5 minutes from right now. I'm going to welcome Kip Elzer from Kirkwood Stables. He's going to talk about the Fasig-Tipton Gulfstream sale, which comes your way on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, the Under Tax Show Monday at 9 a.m. 8:30, today's first bet, followed by Keeneland's new vice president of racing, Gatewood Bell, looking ahead to their spring meet, which begins on Friday. At 8:53, Kira McLaughlin remembers Sheikh Hamdan. That's a segment you will not want to miss. 9 o'clock Eastern time, Hillendale Farm general manager Jared Burdine will be here. At 9:20, Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history. That's presented by Lane's End and by Keeneland. 9:30, Gulfstream handicapper Ron Nicoletti. 10 o'clock, we kick off the third hour of today's show, as we do each and every week, with In the Room, an interview conducted by Sean Clancy. He sits down for a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week with retired jockey Richard Migliori. That's 10 o'clock Eastern. 10:25, it's E5 Racing's Bob Edwards. And at 10:45, you'll hear from trainer Mike Stidham as he talks about his Dubai World Cup morning line favorite, Mystic Guide. So a lot of things to get to here this morning. Again, it begins with Kip Elzer coming up next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Select.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus after you bet $300 and $50 for every $5,000 wagered with code HRRN10 at KeenelandSelect.com or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Al Nuss. Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
Mucho Gusto travels well now. He's three wide, and he's edging up toward the top two. Diamond Oops is fourth. Higher Power's under pressure, and here comes Mucho Gusto, and they're into the stretch, and Mucho Gusto has taken the lead. Mucho Gusto comes to the eighth pole, opening up to lead by four. And back into second is Mr. Freeze on the inside. Then Bodhi Express, Diamond Oops, War Story running on late. Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths. Mr. Freeze was second. War Story was third. Diamond Oops finished fourth. And the final time was 1 minute 48.85 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented today by Keeneland Select. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the Pegasus World Cup and a huge win last year by Mucho Gusto, another of the standouts to come through the Kirkwood Stables program and the Kirkwood Stables consignment. They are very proud of Mucho Gusto, and they should be. There have been so many good horses that have come through their program over the years, and they'll be represented, no doubt, by more coming up next week at the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, which, again, kicks off on Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern. The Under Tack Show takes place on Monday morning. And if you recall, a few years ago, Kip Elzer from Kirkwood joined me on this very same program. And he talked about a new approach and a new philosophy that he was going to introduce with his two-year-olds. Quite often, we see two-year-olds that go out there and blast off and work as fast as they can, and that means that they step into the ring and they bring big numbers. They sell very well. Well, Kip said, hold on, let me see if there's a different way to do this. And he started galloping his horses as opposed to working them. And he only does it at the Gulfstream Sale. And it's something that was a completely novel approach. It was a new idea, and it has worked. And it has worked well for Kip Elzer and the Kirkwood team. And Kip is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He is live at Gulfstream Park getting ready for that sale. Kip, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. I've got to say that last race call you put up put a little spring in my step, bringing my last one in off the racetrack this morning.
I didn't think you would mind that. You know, I looked back at some of the Kirkwood graduates, and there were so many race clips I could have chosen. I mean, I could have gone vintage and gone all the way back to Alphabet Soup and Plum Pretty, or I could have gone a little bit more recent and gone with Chess Chief, who came through your program, and he won the New Orleans Classic last weekend. So there were plenty of different directions to go, Kip, which is always a good thing.
Well, and it's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of nice horses through our hands over the years, and a lot of great people that have owned them, bought them, and wonderful crews that have helped us get them ready for wherever they're going.
What's happening down there in South Florida? I talked about that Fasig Tipton sale. What's going on with the Kirkwood team and the Kirkwood consignment?
The Kirkwood team is galloping very well over the racetrack. We're going to do this. We are doing the same program that we did 2 years ago before the hiatus, and gallop strongly through the stretch, and hope people like them as much as we do, and go ahead, show some confidence, and buy them. Our last group has run well for us, so we're just believing people will come in and give them a good hard look and step up and wave their hands.
Yeah, I mentioned, Kip, that when you introduced the gallop approach to getting horses ready for these two-year-old sales, it was a novel idea. It was a different concept. You didn't know how it was going to work. I don't think anybody did. I think you have to be pleased with the results that you've gotten. Recap for people your philosophy and your thought process that was involved with instituting this approach.
Well, I can't take much of the credit for the idea, or any of the credit for the idea. It was one very brave client of mine at Saratoga. We were talking, and he just said, why don't we just step back from the edge of the cliff a little bit and try it this way? And so we bought a small group of horses, and they went on and did well. We basically follow a pretty just get ready to go to the races kind of program. We're not just hack cantering down through the lane. One of the things we learned was that the we had to go fast enough that the motion analysis people could get them into their computer systems. So, you know, we're going to go down through there better than a two-minute lick, maybe 13 and change, something like that, so that they can get them an idea of stride length and all the different parameters they look at, and people can get a decent look at these horses. It's basically the same as you would do if you were at home getting ready to go to Keeneland or Pimlico or Belmont in the spring, and it would be this time of year that you're starting to just teach them to pick it up and finish well. And that's what we're aiming to do, is be as close to a normal get ready for the races program as we can do it, rather than a specific sale program. One of the other things we do is not school them as much for the one horse, one video, which you have to do if you're going to breeze at the sale. So ours might look around a little more than some of the other ones, but they've been doing most everything at home in company, like you would if you were getting ready to go to the races.
Yeah, and you are still more than capable, Kip, of sending horses out and getting them, you know, quality horses that work fast and you know, prep in that fashion for the two-year-old sales. You look back on the success that you had, what, last week or the week before at the OBS sale. You had a lot of success there with horses that breeze very quickly. What differences, if any, have you noticed in the horses that you send out that breeze quick and then the other horses that just gallop? Have you seen differences in those types of horses?
Well, we're basically, when we go to starting in, hopefully in July and August, looking at yearlings, we're looking for horses, for yearlings, that will be successful racehorses. When we buy this group, we sign for them Gulfstream Gallop or Midway Gallop, which is the other small group, so that people know right from the start that that's the program they're intended for. And we want to completely get away from any notion that they have been in any way tested and found not to be capable. So when they go through the ring, we sign a ticket, Gulfstream or Midway Gallop, that's where they're headed. We're still just looking for a horse that'll be a successful racehorse.
Talking with Kip Elzer from Kirkwood Stables here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, the Gulfstream sale comes up next week. It's on Wednesday, and the Breeze Under Tack show is Monday at 9 a.m., and Kip will be a busy man, as he is typically at all of these two-year-old sales. Kip, I mentioned OBS. You had a great sale at OBS, I guess it was last week or the week before. It was tremendous. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think it's a tribute to the crew I have behind me, mostly at home and on the sales grounds. I was not there. I had to go in for some surgery, and the crew stepped up at home, sent the horses down there. The crew met them in Ocala. Helen came out front of the show, and they got the job done in spectacular fashion. The particular colt, the Violence colt that topped the first day's sale, was bought by our old friend Steve Schwartz, who also picked out and bought Mucho Gusto as a yearling. Steve sent him over to us, and it was just pretty obvious by early October that this is a colt that wanted to get on with things, and that's what we should do with him. So there was no head scratching about this one. It was just stay out of his way.
Yeah, they did a great job, and that team just tremendous at Kirkwood Stables, and the program has produced so many top horses. Kip, when you think about 2021 and you look back on everything that happened last year with the pandemic and sales being canceled and now the return of the Gulfstream sale, from a consigner's perspective, where are we with the two-year-old sales market, and maybe even if you can put your crystal ball out in front of you and look ahead to the yearling sales market, where are we with those two markets right now as an industry?
Well, that's a very good question. At OBS, it seemed like there was a very broad-based market. Obviously, there was the top end is always there, but we also had some mid-range horses that brought solid money. It seems like there is quite a bit of pent-up demand. People want to get back to the races. They want to have horses again, and everybody is just getting their toe on the line, ready to get started again. I think there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm in all parts of the business.
Well, that's good to hear, and I hope that does hold true as we move throughout this season. I know from a personal standpoint, I'm excited to get back to the races and start traveling a little bit again, and we didn't get a chance to do that last year. Thankfully, we were able to continue with all of our shows and race coverage remotely, but boy, it's so nice to be able to get out and see people again and get back to some sense of normalcy, isn't it?
It certainly is. And, you know, to just see faces that you haven't been able to see in a year, to have some conversations and show some nice horses to people, it's just a lot of fun. We're all on buyers, sellers, sales company reps. Everybody's just glad to be back in action.
Well, Kip, I appreciate the visit here this morning, and thanks for taking a little time. I know it's a busy time for you getting ready for that sale. All the best next week. We'll encourage people to go to kirkwoodstables.com to learn more about your operation and to learn more about the horses that you'll be selling. They can also go to fasictipton.com and pull up the catalog and take a look at all those horses that you're going to be selling next week, too. So appreciate it, Kip, and all the best next week, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and come visit when you get down here.
Sure will. Kip Elzer, Kirkwood Stables, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Look, if you're talking about doing business with somebody that is respected in this game, Kip Elzer is about as good as it gets, and he does a fantastic job. So my thanks to him for being part of the program this morning and taking a look ahead to that Fasic Tipton sale. And again, Fasic Tipton, second to none. What a job they do down there in Florida. So if you're going to be in South Florida, if you're not, make sure you go to fasictipton.com to learn more about their sale. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet, and then my visit with Gatewood Bell, the new Vice President of Racing at Keeneland. That's all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
Pouring back the sands of time through the hourglass of racing history to a late November day in 1923 brings us to the story of a match race between two superb thoroughbreds who squared off in a rubber match, having defeated each other once already. It was at Churchill Downs, and an enormous crowd had assembled for what promised to be a dandy in no uncertain terms. The combatants, Harry F. Sinclair Zev and Carl Weideman's In Memorial. Zeb had won the first confrontation between the two in that year's edition of the Kentucky Derby, and In Memoriam had turned the tables on his foe in the Latonia Championship Stakes barely 3 weeks before this particular match race. Each of the owners put up $10,000. The Kentucky Jockey Club did likewise. The winner was to take home $25,000, the loser $5,000. Earl Sandy was in the saddle on Zeb. Mac Garner drew the assignment on In Memoriam. Zeb was a big brown horse wearing blinkers for this match, and In Memoriam was a strapping bay with a deep chest and a long, free stride. When they lined up at the barrier, every eye was glued to the two stalwarts, and the excitement and anticipation of the moment was indeed intense. Zeb made a false start. Then starter William Hamilton let them go on their way to a race that, to this very day, underscored in the annals of sport as one of the all-time great ones. Zev broke out on top, but apparently under orders. Sandy wrapped up his mount a bit and let In Memoriam under Garner go on out to set the pace. Down the stretch, neath the hallowed twin spires and on into the turn, it was In Memoriam by a length. On around the clubhouse turn, they stayed the same way, and as they went down the backside, In Memoriam opened the lead up to a length and a half. At the half-mile pole, In Memoriam headed by two, and Zeb's fans began to wonder if their favorite could catch his rival, who was running easily and being well-rated by Garner. At the three-furlong marker, Sandy dropped his mount down and asked for a run, and a run he got. The white soaks of the Rancocas stable glistening in the fall sunlight began to cut down the margin, and by the time they hit the top of the stretch, they were racing as a team, a ton of horse flesh pounding powerfully to the wire. This, my friends, was a horse race by any measure or means. In Memoriam on the rail, Zev matching marvelous strides just to the outside of him. As they thundered down the straight, Zev drew away to an open length lead, and then a length and a half, but with a furlong to run. It was for practical purposes all over. It appeared In Memoriam was a beaten horse. But wait just 1 minute. Garner began pumping, whipping and driving furiously, and with enormous courage, In Memoriam came on again, closing the gap with every long, smooth stride. Late on that bright, sunny autumn afternoon, with shadows creeping across the racing surface, these two titans of the turf, with their brilliant riders driving their mounts forward in synchronized motion, provided the vast throng with the most magnificent spectacle of sport. The crowd roar had been swelling to now reach a crescendo as the two locked together just noses apart, only jumps to the wire. The 40,000 on hand at Churchill that day breathlessly spent from what had been a spectacular race. As they hit the wire with In Memoriam on the rail, Zev on the outside, nothing to separate them. Zev roared some, and Memoriam roared others. "It's a dead heat," yelled one spectator who nearly toppled from a perch on the grandstand roof from all the excitement. Jack Dempsey, a longtime well-noted turf observer, called it In Memoriam by a nose. "In Memoriam," the wires flashed, and the telephones called out. But wait just 1 minute. The call came out that Zev had been declared the winner. So close was the finish that will always be, to this very day, a matter of dispute amongst those who saw it as to which horse actually had won it. There were no photographically recorded finishes in those days, only three placing judges hovering above the track at the wire, who apparently saw Zeb's brown nose at the wire, a bare fraction before In Memoriam's ruddy bay nostrils. Both riders, Sandy and Garner, had handled their mounts beautifully. Losing owner Carl Weideman said to winning owner Harry Sinclair, quote, "It was a race fit for kings between the two best horses ever to be found," unquote. It all happened November of 1923 at Churchill Downs, a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington, and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Orb, winner of the Kentucky Derby and Florida Derby. His runners have scored on both dirt and turf. His recent stakes success includes Mrs. Orb, winner of the Bay Ridge Stakes at Aqueduct, Pippin Stakes victress Whoa Nelly, and Derlu, a determined runner-up in the Grade 3 La Cañada Stakes at Santa Anita. Classic winner, classic pedigree, or standing at Claiborne Farm.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park will reopen on a limited basis to the general public beginning Friday, April 2nd, with the Grade 1 $750,000 Run Happy Santa Anita Derby highlighting a blockbuster card on Saturday, April 3rd. Please visit santaanita.com for details, and if possible, make plans to join us in person. And don't forget, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Our main event this Saturday will go as our ninth and final race, the Grade 3 $100,000 Santa Ana Stakes. First post time is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest at 11:50 a.m. as they analyze each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select. You're going to hear from Keeneland's new Vice President of Racing, Gatewood Bell, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Kieran McLaughlin, still to come later in this first hour of the program, reflecting upon the life and the career of Sheikh Hamdan, who passed away earlier this week, and some thoughts on jockey Larry Melanson, who also left us on Thursday after a long battle with health issues following a stroke that he suffered a few years back. Jared Burdine from Hillendale comes up at 9 o'clock Eastern. At 9:30, Ron Nicoletti joins me from Gulfstream Park to handicap all the big races. At 10 o'clock, it's In the Room with Sean Clancy, a visit with jockey Richard Migliori this morning. Bob Edwards from E5 Racing at 10:30, and at 10:45, you'll hear from Mike Stidham talking about his Dubai World Cup morning line favorite, Mystic Guide. So a lot of things to get to here this morning, but time now to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race 9 at Gulfstream Park, a 1 mile turf allowance with a post time of 3:37 Eastern. Number 4, Summer to Remember, 4-1 on the morning line, has a 26% win projection from First Bet, rates 11 points higher than the next closest competitor according to the algorithm, ranks number 1 in the field in 7 of First Bet's 10 most important factors for this race, and the Irod Ortiz Jr., Todd Pletcher jockey trainer combo is winning at a 33% clip on turf at the championship meet. Summer to Remember was third in the Tropical Park Derby to Colonel Liam, who since won the Pegasus World Cup turf and Fairgrounds Mervyn Muniz Memorial. Number 4, Summer to Remember in race 9 at Gulfstream Park is today's First Bet. I'll be back to visit with Gatewood Bell in 60 seconds.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Bets flowing next weekend at Keeneland as they open the spring meet, and welcome back a few fans. It's going to be a festive atmosphere here in the Bluegrass. And in February, Keeneland announced Gatewood Bell as the new vice president of racing. His pedigree, his past performances certainly suggest that he's the right man for the job, and he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Gatewood, good morning. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, morning, Mike. How's everything?
Yeah, happy to have you on board and looking forward to the visit this morning. Listen, you are less than a week away from your first opening day as the vice president of racing. What have the past few weeks been like for you?
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. Been a little bit drinking out of a fire hydrant, but it's been just, it's amazing when you get inside this place and just the manpower and the people it takes to put on the show for all of us fans. You know, obviously I still am a fan, but I grew up coming there as a fan, and it's just amazing the amount of people and teamwork that it takes. And so I've just been, you know, getting around trying to meet everybody, all the different departments, and see what makes it all work. And but it's been a lot of fun, and I'm very excited for the actual racing to start on Friday.
Drinking out of a fire hydrant, what a great way to put it. You know, Gatewood, you bring a wealth of racing experience to the table, but with any new job, there is always a bit of a learning curve. So what are some of the things that you've had to learn as the new vice president of racing?
Whew, that'd be the whole 15 minutes. Everything from using Outlook for my email and having my calendar scheduled to just, you know, dealing with people. I obviously came from the bloodstock side where I have my own company and, you know, didn't really have anybody working, you know, helping me. And so it's nice having just so many friendly people to help you do things. I'm not used to that. And just working alongside of people. And, you know, that's been a little bit of a learning curve. So hopefully I haven't been too bad at it. But mainly the technology side of it and making sure my calendar and emails are answered and filled out properly.
There are so many people that are listening that are probably going, okay, what on earth does a vice president of racing do at a racetrack? So describe that for people, Gatewood. What is your exact job description?
Yeah, that was the same question I had about 6 weeks ago. I had no idea, really. I mean, it's just everything involved with the racing product here, and it kind of melds into just everything for our what would be like our core customers, our horsemen, our, you know, local horse people, breeders, all the trainers, all the people that work back here, and the horses themselves. So, I mean, it encompasses everything with working. They've obviously got awesome teams in place already. Ben Huffman and Tiffany in the racing office. It involves, you know, going over condition books and stake schedules and purse structures with them. Working with Wayne Mogi and his great crew on, you know, stall applications and, you know, having the barnyard filled up. With Alfredo and Tim and Jim Pendergast, who are in charge of our racing surfaces, you know, been walking the turf course and, you know, learning about our dirt surface and, you know, hanging out with them. And to the starting gate crew, Scott Jordan's crew, kind of, I don't like to use the word manage, but they're all very capable. So just kind of check in with them and then just getting around on the backside and talking with all the trainers and horse people and, you know, listening to them and seeing what we can do better and to make Keeneland the safest and best place to train and race thoroughbred in America.
What's the best advice that you've received from somebody on that team? Maybe somebody like a Ben Huffman that has that experience and has been there a long time, or even somebody that's been in that position before. Have you had anybody give you advice that has really resonated with you, Gatewood?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just, you know, a couple of people have just said, just whatever you do, just use your judgment, and whatever you do, just treat everybody fairly, which I always try and do anyways, and treat people like you want to be treated, and, you know, you're going to make, but don't be afraid to make some mistakes and try new things. You know, it's one thing with Keeneland, it's so great that it's got this storied history and tradition, and it's a big part of why we all love the place and why I love the place. But it's also in a position where, you know, it can be innovative, and we can risk you know, looking silly and trying something new and making a mistake, and it's not going to be the complete end of the world as long as you're doing it for the right reasons and trying it for the right reasons. So you know, basically just treat everybody fairly and don't be afraid to make some mistakes.
talking with new Keeneland Vice President of Racing, Gatewood Bell, here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented this entire month, or this entire show, by Keeneland Select. And thankful for their support and thankful for Gatewood taking the time here this morning. Gatewood, when people in the racing and breeding community hear the name Bell, it is a family name that is synonymous with class and integrity and, quite simply, doing things the right way. For you, growing up at your family's John and Bell Farm, tell me more about your background and where that true love and passion began for you.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll be the first. I'm very lucky. I was born on third base, and I'm very well aware of that. And it was just a wonderful way to grow up. And more importantly, it was just the people that were around me that taught me, what I think is the way to act and how to treat people and how to go about your business. And that started, with my grandfather, Schultz, and trickled down to my uncles and aunts and my father and my mom. And, so I was very lucky. Grew up on the farm. I loved playing around. It was more like a playground. Started off working there when I was probably, 12 or 13, but it was grubbing thistles in the maintenance department. And my cousin Jamie was kind of head of the maintenance department, so he liked to keep me in the thistle yard. But it was always a special treat when you got old enough to be able to go for an hour and prep the yearling. So you got to hold horses for an hour, hour and a half. I think I let one go the second day on the job. So I went back to the thistles and had to do a little time in the penalty box and came back. But, so it started off there. And then I would come to the races. I was always really into the racing stable that my grandfather had and then that our clients had and horses that were running off the farm. I obviously liked a little bit of a bet. I think I remember my first $5 bet and my first $10 bet on Manila Man here at Keeneland. And, so the gambling side of it and the angle side of it definitely got me a little bit. And anything that came off the farm, I was just always following and just had an appreciation for. And I just got obsessed. I tried to get away from it a little bit in college, and it didn't work out very well. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you that question. Was there a time when you thought about, maybe doing something outside of the industry and you just couldn't do it? You had to get back involved.
Yeah. So I went to school in Georgia freshman year and liked it. Everybody thinks I failed out, and I didn't, but I came home just because you couldn't even have a TVG signal, and I was coming home every weekend for Keeneland anyways, and I was a little homesick, but more from the racing side of it than from my family. And came back to Kentucky and got a finance degree, and I was also into that stuff, and I was half decent at it, I guess. I probably wouldn't have lasted very long. And I remember I had a meeting with Steve Dunker, and he just took me for a coffee or a beer or something, and we chatted for half an hour. And he said, "Man, I could recommend you to go work for here, here, and here." And he goes, "But if I were you, I'd just get right back in the horse business, because that's all I could tell you were actually passionate about and cared about." And in my mind, I was like, "I'm going to go somewhere else and make a bunch of money and then come working horses." And, just having that conversation with him made me say that whole idea of not having to work a day if you actually enjoy what you're doing. And pretty glad that I listened to him.
Fantastic stuff. Gatewood Bell with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I know you also spent time working with Kieran McLaughlin for a few seasons when he was in Florida and even in Kentucky and New York. And that was a time when Kieran had Invisor and Jazzle and some of the greatest horses that he ever had the chance to train. And we're going to hear from Kieran in the next segment, remembering Sheikh Hamdan, who passed away this week. But did you have much interaction at that time, Gatewood, with Sheikh Hamdan when you were working with Kieran?
Not personally with him. I met him at the sales once, but Kieran's stories, we talked about him borderline daily in the barn. He had pretty much all of his horses. I think he had all of his horses. Danny Pites had some, actually. Sorry. But Kieran, when I got to go work for Kieran again, that was just the product of like being lucky enough to have the association from my dad. And so I got to know Kieran, and he knew that I wasn't going to be, I always wanted to be a trainer, but I didn't want the lifestyle of it. And so he, like, it was going to grad school and I was just a hot walker. And then in after training hours were over, I was basically like, I mean, I would say I was his PA, but I didn't even really do anything for him. I just sat there and listened to him. And he was like, I was like his little buddy that he just taught everything to and just let me hang out with him. And so I got to hang out with him and listen to all the trainers up in the train. You know, like, it was just the greatest experience that, you know, I was very lucky to be able to get in that position. But Kieran would always, I mean, he's a great storyteller, and he would always tell his stories from his 10 years in Dubai and all just the wonderful things that Sheikh Hamdan, you know, did for him and his family and taught him about the horses. It was amazing. Like, I mean, he'll tell you the stories, but just how in tune the man was with his horses. I mean, he knew his horses better than, I mean, as well as any trainer would, let alone an owner. And, I mean, he'll have some great stories for you. He was a wonderful man.
Yeah. Looking forward to Kieran's comments coming up in the next segment here on the program. Gatewood, about a minute or so left before I have to get to the next commercial break. And we got talking about your background and your pedigree and your passion for the sport. Didn't even get to talking about next weekend, opening weekend at Keeneland. Boy, that is a weekend just loaded with outstanding graded stakes, including the Toyota Bluegrass.
Yeah, man, it's going to be, it'll be fun. I'm new here, so I was in charge of the weather this year, and we left everything else up to the racing team that was in place. But man, I'm excited. There's going to be some, you know, 9 graded stakes. 6 of them are for 3-year-olds. We've got Essential Quality coming for the Bluegrass, and you know, I think there's going to be a handful of people that are in there to take them on. The Ashland's actually looking quite deep. I think Sheikh Hamdan's Malathat's going to come for that, and you know, that's going to be really exciting. Always there's Keeneland. The trainers love coming here because they know our maiden races and our allowance races are going to fill. They don't have to worry about them. So you usually get some horses that have been held back, that some good ones are going to come out of those maidens. And A, other thans, you never know when you're going to see the next star in the fall that broke their maiden or won an A other than here. And the weather looks nice, and I think people in Lexington are just really dying to get out and do something and celebrate spring. And nothing says that spring's here like the opening day of Keeneland's meet.
Yeah, very well said. Gatewood Bell, the vice president of racing at Keeneland. Keeneland is in very, very good hands with that racing program with Gatewood at the controls. Gatewood, listen, appreciate the visit this morning. Congratulations on the new position and all the best moving forward, and look forward to seeing you when we get out there next weekend.
Yeah, man, come anytime. We'll be happy to host you. Really appreciate the time.
Sounds great. Gatewood Bell on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, as all of our interviews are, is brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. When I come back, Kieran McLaughlin reflects upon Sheikh Hamdan. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
And they're into the stretch with Spongeron, the wonder catch, coming to the eighth pole. Spongeron drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spongeron has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spongeron, the real deal in the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainsway Stallion, Spongeron.
In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any three-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass five times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple Graded Stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
Indian Chant is the leader, and Off Duty is in between horses in second. Saint and Dan angles to the far outside in third, three lengths off the lead. Connections looks toward the inside. Rebellion five lengths away. Musive is in the center of the track, along with Markham. They come for the eighth pole. Saint and Dan has clear running to come after Off Duty, Indian Chant, and now Rebellion picking in from in between horses. Rebellion coming late. Off Duty has the lead. Rebellion is there toward the outside. Off Duty, Rebellion, the line coming quickly. Off Duty with jockey Larry Melanchon to take the Phoenix by a half length over fast closing Rebellion, home second, and St. Andan was third in 1:10.
That's Kurt Becker with a call of the Grade 3 Phoenix Stakes. That was in 2007, and a huge win for Off Duty and jockey Larry Melanchon, one of many, many Graded Stakes that Larry won in his career. As a matter of fact, that was the penultimate Graded Stakes victory for him. He came back in 2009 and won the Gardenia Handicap with Whirly Birdie. But, wow. You know, what a career for Larry Melanchon, who passed away on Thursday at the age of 65 at his house in Louisville, Kentucky. A Louisiana native, Melanchon retired from riding in 2010 after that successful career. He won 2,857 races and more than $60 million in purses. And as I said at the top of the show, when you talk to people about Larry Melanchon, not only was he regarded as a top jockey and a great horseman, but everybody will tell you he was a great person, and he will be missed here on this Saturday morning and beyond as the racing world has lost another great ambassador. Also, Sheikh Hamdan passing away. Of course, the longtime proprietor of Shadwell, Kieran McLaughlin, knew him very, very well, training for them for many, many years. He's going to reflect upon Sheikh Hamdan coming up in just a minute. But I thought, in light of losing those two titans in our game, it would be appropriate this morning to make them co-industry stars of the week. So Sheikh Hamdan and Larry Melanchon are co-industry stars of the week on this Saturday morning. This segment presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignments at all of the major sales. Well, Kieran McLaughlin joined Anthony Stabile on our Race Day program earlier this week, and he talked about Sheikh Hamdan.
It's a loss for so many people. My condolences go out to his family and all the Shadwell team, and all the hundreds of employees that worked for him all over the world. He was a great man and just a wonderful person, a great horseman, a great man. and the racing has lost one of its best friends worldwide.
Talk a little about how you met Shee Kam, Don. You part of that Chadwell family for a couple of decades.
I went to Dubai in 1993. I was hired by Sheikh Mohammed to come to Dubai and be a public trainer, but the government paid me, so I was kind of a private trainer and a public trainer, and I soon met Sheikh Hamdan there, and he gave me three or four horses that first year, and then it built on from that and went up to as many as 40 or 50 horses in Dubai and America. So it was a great relationship, and it was fabulous to work for, a fabulous man to work for.
Countless stakes winners from over the years, of course. The first two to come to mind are 2006 Horse of the Year in the very Invisor. In that very same year, you got him an American Classic win with Jazzle.
Yes, Jazzle was our first and only Classic winner for me and my stable, and him, hopefully, I guess that was it too in the American Classics, but he won many Classics elsewhere. But Invisor was a very special horse, and he came from Uruguay to us in Florida. We trained him, took him to Dubai, and ran in the UA Derby as a four-year-old, and he finished fourth. And Sheikh Hamdan said, take him back to America and race on. So we ran him quickly back, and we went on and started racing him in a Pimlico Special, and he won, and he kept winning, never lost again in racing in America or Dubai. And winning the World Cup in 2007 was the highlight of my career, because he was such a great man to be involved with and be able to go back and win the world's richest race with him sitting there on the couch watching. It just can't get any better than that for the McLaughlin team, and it was a fabulous night.
The Invisor story, and you've told it numerous times, a lot of trainers were always a little reluctant to run horses back quick from Dubai, and Invisor was really one of the first ones to have any success. I mean, he ran on in that UAE Derby, like you said, as a Southern Hemisphere four-year-old. I mean, it wasn't 7 weeks when he came back and won that Pimlico Special.
Yeah, and that particular horse and other horses too, I have to give credit to Rick Nichols, because we were pointing for a lesser race on the day, and Rick said, let's see if he's a good horse, run him in the Pimlico Special. So I told him they only had like six horses in the Pimlico Special, so I give him a lot of credit that he said, let's just see how good he is, and we got lucky to win it. So Sheikh Hamdan was a very knowledgeable horseman and a great horseman, and I learned a lot from him, and he loved his breeding operation. He bred, so many champions, and he loved going to see the sires when he came to Kentucky. And he retired his fillies at the end of their three-year-old year because he felt like they produced better as young mares, and he didn't like to raise four- and five-year-olds. But he gave us La Hadood. And he said, I think there's a little more in this filly, and I want to race her as a four-year-old. That's the only one. We had two that year, and both of them won graded stakes. And La Hadood ended up being champion, and yet he still never went on to race four-year-olds and five-year-olds. He might let you run one time early, four-year-old, before breeding season, but he just loved his breeding operation and wanted to breed them as four-year-olds.
You had a very close personal relationship with him as well, and when you got sick, it sounded like he did as much for you as anybody else possibly did.
Yes, he asked me to go to the Mayo Clinic and get another opinion, and just see, make sure that I had MS, and so he lined up for me to go to the Mayo Clinic. And he was just a special man. It's the things that he did behind the scenes for the world of racing, and so many sponsorships. He sponsored so many races. You have the Chadwell Mile at Keeneland, but so many races around the world. He just was a wonderful person and very generous to the industry worldwide.
Yeah, very special. And my thanks to Kieran for taking time to visit with Anthony on race day earlier this week. Sheikh Hamdan and Larry Malanson both will be missed and their impact felt for many, many years to come. Back with hour number two, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. The story of the deputy gets a happy ending as his former trainer Janine Sahadi, along with his owners, Team Valor CEO Barry Irwin, and Gary Barber recently rescued the 2000 Santa Anita Derby winner, who is now 24 years old. According to a release from Team Valor, the retired stallion is now safely housed at Remember Me Rescue, a thoroughbred aftercare alliance accredited operation near Burleson, Texas. The deputy, bought by Team Valor and Barber after he won a maiden race in England at 2, went on to win the Grade 2 Santa Catalina Stakes and the Grade 1 Santa Anita Derby. He also finished second to eventual Kentucky Derby winner Fusiichi Pegasus in the San Felipe. The deputy gave Gary Barber his first Grade 1 winner and was retired after blowing his tendon in that year's run for the Roses. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented this morning by Keeneland Select. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, 1 hour down, two to go. If you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. They're there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Well, I asked you the poll question this morning, which you can vote for at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. The poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. It's a bit of a prop bet, if you will. Who wins today's Kierland Florida Derby? Gave you two choices. The favorite, Greatest Honor, or the field. Is Greatest Honor that good that you would take him over everybody else in the race? Well, 52% of you say yes, he is. It's close, nip and tuck, but right now, Greatest Honor, 52% over the field, 48% coming in for the field. You can also email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts on that particular topic. Well, somebody who is going to be no doubt locked in to the Kierland Florida Derby this afternoon is Jared Burdine, who is the general manager at Hillandale, and he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jared, good morning.
Hey, Mike. Glad to join you here on Kierland Florida Derby Day.
Yeah, happy Kierland Florida Derby Day. How cool is it to see his name alongside a prestigious race like that?
Well, it's key. The tagline we like to use now is the classic sire, and I don't think there's any better horse that's for classic distance on the dirt and a better sire than Kierland out there. He's got Known Agenda, homebred for St. Elias, running in there today. In the Judmont filly, I'm not going to butcher her name, but the Judmont filly and the Gulfstream Oaks there today. Also on undercard, Kitten's Joy is sponsoring the Appleton Stakes. Then the Hal's Hope is renamed the Ghost Sapper Stakes.
So, yeah, fantastic.
Back to the Florida Derby, though. Too, you mentioned Greatest Honor there too, and it's one of our big female families that he comes from there too. Second Dam, Better Than Honor. Obviously, we sold her for a world record, $14 million, after she produced the two Belmont winners, Giselle and Rags to Riches. And we still own quite a few. I don't even know how many to count at this point. How many broodmares we have out of that female family. Lots of rooting interest in the Kierland Florida Derby today.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, there are no shortage of things to talk about when you talk about Hillandale Farms. Let's start, Jared, first and foremost by talking about the move that was recently made, shifting operations out to Alapa, which is in Paris, Kentucky. Tell me about that and what that's allowed you to do with the operation.
Well, Alapa is a majestic place. It's steeped in history, and the lands and the soil and the grass, it's just the growth charts of our foals since we moved out there is up like 25% or something like that.
Wow.
It's just a place that you can feel the history when you get out there and look at the diversity of trees and wildlife, and it's just a bucolic setting to raise horses.
Yeah, and
very,
it's
very peaceful, and it's all most of it's the vision of John Sakura, the farm owner.
Yeah, and it's a piece of land that has so much history, as you just alluded to, and you know it's great to see somebody like John and an operation like Hillendale reside there now. I think it just makes perfect sense, and you know you talk about the space that's there and the things that you're able to do, and it certainly has to help when you're talking with clients and you bring them out there and you let them see a show place like Alapa, and they get a chance to see the stallions. You know, all of that kind of ties together, and I know that it's going to mean big things up the road for Hillendale as you continue to grow and move into the future. You mentioned the name Ghost Sapper earlier, and you talked about the fact that one of the stakes races is now renamed the Ghost Sapper. Ghost Sapper is a name that people are, when they look at Ghost Sapper, they think, okay, Adena Springs, that's where he's standing. But now he has moved over to Hillendale. Tell me more about Ghost Sapper and some of the newer additions.
So Frank Stronach entrusted us, and I guess he's kind of shutting things down here in Kentucky, and he's entrusted us with Ghost Sapper and Mucho Macho Man. Ghost Sapper, he's going to turn into one of those breed-shaping horses, too, just like Curlin. He's going to be a prolific broodmare sire. He already is. He's the broodmare sire of Triple Crown winner Justify. He's got Mystic Guide. He's going to be the favorite in the Dubai World Cup here in a couple hours. Fearless is another graded stakes winner this year. Ghost Sapper's got 12 Grade One winners, Guana last year, a whole host of them. He's not only was he's one of my favorite racehorses as well. Some of his races are breathtaking to watch, especially the classic at Lone Star, and some of his races in New York are just breathtaking.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
He's settled in into his new setting here. He looks like he's loving life there at Alapa. He looks like a young man again.
That's what we like to hear about Ghost Sapper, reinvigorated at Hillendale and his new surroundings. And you mentioned the fact that he's been so good with his broodmares, and there are so many stallions on that roster. And by the way, I'll just encourage folks to go to hillendalefarms.com to see the entire roster, to read about all of the different stallions, because we won't have time to talk about them all this morning. But you have a couple of other notable stallions who have really either gotten off to a fast start or have continued to produce at a very high level. And one of those goes by the name of Violence. How good has he been?
Yeah, Violence had three Grade One winners last year, and he's picking it up here again this year. And he's got a few that are turning the corner. And he had a $550,000 two-year-old at OBS last week, Spendthrift Bond. So we look for him to keep carrying on the torch. He's a gorgeous individual, and he throws a gorgeous individual. He's by Medaglia d'Oro, and we look for big things to continue for him off of a big year last year. He sold out again this year, so the future's bright. He's got big crops behind him that are coming down the road that are some of his best bred. So we look for continued success for him.
You know, when you go to hillendalefarms.com, one of the first things you see is an ad that you created, Jared, you and the team created, for Army Mule, and he's another name that I think we need to talk about. It says three words at the top of that ad: unbeaten and unchallenged. Enough said, right?
Enough said. He very few starts, but nobody came in, within 10 lengths of him. When he was right, nobody could even touch him. He's another beautiful moving horse. And his babies, we have quite a few on the farm. And it seems like when we go out and look at the yearlings of this year, he has the first crop of yearlings this year, first crop of weanlings last year. sold for up to $210,000, off of a, you know, he stands for 7,500 right now. And we go look at yearlings, and it seems like everyone we look at before we look at the pedigree, oh, this one's nice. Who's this one by? And then it's Army Mule. Oh, who's this one by? Oh, that's Army Mule too. But there's he's definitely got some beautiful individuals out there.
Jared, what is it about the John Sakura's philosophy, I guess, that has allowed you to continue to have success for so long? It's year in, year out. You're always at the top of the list when it comes to sales and breeding. What is that philosophy that's allowed you to continue to do so?
Well, we just deal with quality and deal with the top, and he's got a great vision and sees things a lot faster than most. He has great gut instincts, and we just try to emulate that, and it all starts with him, and we just try to carry out his vision with the details.
Yeah, John was one of the first farm personnel, the first farm owners, I guess, that I ever met when I first started on radio years ago. And I just remember that first conversation thinking, man, this guy is smart. He is a visionary, and he is smart. And that's the one thing I can always say about John Sakura, is that he has done things, you know, the right way, and built the program and built the farm and surrounded himself with good people like you and Donato Lani. And it just continues to grow and expand, and I'm so happy for all your success. Talking with Jared Burdine, the general manager at Hillendale, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jared, before I wrap it up here, we got a couple of minutes left. We started by talking about Curlin and the Curlin Florida Derby later today at Gulfstream. Some big news coming out involving champion Midnight Bisou. Why don't you fill us in there?
Yeah, she's was scanned in full to Curlin this year. We're excited about that mating. You know, two champions, and thank you to Jeff Bloom and the Allens for entrusting us with Midnight Bisou's care. She's a super classy mare. It's no surprise that she did everything right, and that's a mating to be excited for.
No doubt about it. Jared Burdine here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jared, listen, appreciate the visit this morning. Thanks for all your support of what you do to help us out here on the network, and continued success, my friend. Enjoy Florida.
Thanks, Mike.
Curlin Florida Derby Day.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks, Jared Burdine. Yeah, they really, I mean, year in and year out, Hillendale is there. They're there on the breeding side, they're there on the sales side, and they're at the top of every list you can possibly think of. And, you know, you can see why. As Jared said, quality. The stallion roster is quality. They bring quality horses to the sales. That's what they do. And that mating with Midnight Bisou and Curlin, that's going to be a lot of fun to see how that progresses. That's outstanding. Can't wait to see that little baby enter the world. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, it's time to stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. You won't want to miss that segment. And then Ron Nicoletti coming up at 9:30 to handicap all the big races down at Gulfstream Park today. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Select.
Airdrie Studs' Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Al Must. Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan? First Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit EddieWoods.com.
Broken valve.
a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 Poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
We're into the stretch of the Florida Derby, and Dunkirk has taken the lead on the outside. Quality Road battles right back with him. There goes Jojo, checked out on the restart. Quality Road has come back inside of Dunkirk, and he's opening up late. Here is a superstar. Quality Road wins it. Dunkirk is second. There goes Jojo and Stately Character. And that's another track record. 1 minute 47.72 seconds.
That's Larry Colmus with a call of the 2009 Florida Derby. And Quality Road, Dunkirk, that showdown. Quality Road getting the victory that day. It was a huge win for Hall of Famer John Velasquez, because it was the first of a record five victories in the Florida Derby for Johnny V. He has played an integral role in the history of our sport, as have so many other jockeys and so many other trainers and so many horses. And that brings me to this week's edition of our Stroll Through Racing History with Kurt Becker, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. On a weekend when the racing world celebrates renewals of both the Florida Derby and the Dubai World Cup, perhaps no horse better captures the spirit of the hour than a horse who loved Gulfstream Park and later sired a Dubai World Cup winner. His name? Fly So Free. Bred by Bruce Hundley and Wayne Garrison and sold in the open session at Keeneland's July yearling sale in 1989, Fly So Free was a Kentucky-bred son of time for a change. Owner Thomas Philando was a Broadway producer and music publisher, and Fly So Free was the first horse he had ever owned. And with Scotty Schulhofer handling the training chores, Fly So Free would make back 10 times his purchase price as a juvenile, winning four of six starts. The colt's talent was evident in his debut at Belmont Park of May of 1990, when he won at five furlongs in a time of 57 and 4/5 seconds. A shoulder injury sustained in the Tremont Stakes in July interrupted his schedule, and he would not return to the races until October 6 in the Grade 1 Champagne Stakes. Despite a layoff of 2.5 months, and despite stretching from 5.5 furlongs to a mile, Fly So Free responded with a five-length romp under jockey Jose Santos. 3 weeks later, Fly So Free stepped into the starting gate at Belmont for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. The public made him the 7-5 favorite on the strength of that performance in the Champagne. Santos had won the Juvenile Fillies aboard Meadow Star earlier that afternoon, and as he guided Fly So Free down the lane in the Juvenile, all he had to do was withstand the challenge of 33-1 outsider Take Me Out. Tom Durkin of NBC with the call.
They're coming down to the final 16th, and it is Fly So Free who has the lead in a big day for Jose Santos as he scores here with Fly So Free widening his lead with every stride. And the pat on the flank for Fly So Free, richly deserved.
The victory by Fly So Free was enough to elevate him to an Eclipse Award as champion juvenile over the popular West Coast contender Best Pal, who had run sixth that afternoon. Having established his affinity for Belmont Park, Fly So Free had new worlds to conquer as he began his three-year-old campaign. The scene would move to Florida and a series of Kentucky Derby preps at Gulfstream Park. His first start of 1991 would come in the 7-furlong Hutchison Stakes. The result was a win. His second start on February 23rd would be in the Fountain of Youth. He won that race by 6 lengths. On March 16, 1991, Fly So Free would run his record to 3 in a row to start the year with a victory in the Florida Derby. Dispatched as the 2-5 favorite before a crowd of 30,000 spectators, Fly So Free defeated the field, which included future Triple Crown race winners Strike the Gold and Hansel. In the process, he became only the third horse ever to win the Gulfstream Triple, the Hutchison, the Fountain of Youth, and the Florida Derby, with the others having been Easy Spur in 1959 and Spectacular Bid in 1979. Despite the terrific start to his 3-year-old season, Fly So Free would sustain a loss as the 1-5 favorite in the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland in his final prep for the Kentucky Derby. And he would run 5th behind Strike the Gold as the second betting choice in the 117th run for the Roses. Schulhofer mapped a new plan for Fly So Free following the Kentucky Derby, and it was one which would see him make a transition to becoming a sprinter. He would win the 7-furlong Riva Ridge on the undercard on Belmont Stakes Day later that spring. And 2 years later, he would capture the 6-furlong Fall Highweight Handicap at Belmont, carrying 135 pounds. Fly So Free was retired to stallion duty at the end of the 1993 season to Three Chimneys Farm in Midway, Kentucky, where he would remain until his death at the age of 15 in 2003. He is perhaps best remembered as the sire of Captain Steve, who won the $6 million Dubai World Cup in March of 2001.
Captain Steve on the grandstand side put his head in front of two, the victory. They're clear of State Shadow and High Tory. Captain Steve, a length in front, up to the victory. Then State Shadow and High Tory. Captain Steve drawing clear. 50 metres left to run, and Captain Steve has the Dubai World Cup won.
In winning what was at the time the world's richest horse race, Captain Steve had given his sire a measure of prominence on the international stage. And so we remember Fly So Free on the 30th anniversary of his triumph in the Florida Derby and on the 20th anniversary of his son Captain Steve winning the Dubai World Cup. Please join me again next week when I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Man, I just love those segments. My thanks to Kurt Becker and to Keeneland and Lane's End for helping to make them possible. You can catch Stroll Through Racing History every single Saturday morning here on the Equine Forum, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and, of course, streaming worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Going to get to another break. When I come back, I welcome Ron Nicoletti from Gulfstream Park to handicap all the big races coming up on a loaded Florida Derby day. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Select.
Justify, a 4-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the 3-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner
Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, AL Master, Cafe Faro. Can this be American Faro's Japan? First Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
Stormello around the far turn, three quarters of a length over a door, the Golden Scat Daddy. Chaloki's hanging in there on the inside. Notional's being put to the whip. He's on the far outside. And they're coming to the top of the stretch in the Florida Derby. And Stormello and Scat Daddy are right together. Chaloki's in a tight spot on the rail. And Notional is now coming with his run in the final furlong. It is Scat Daddy in front. Notional to the outside. To the inside, Stormello's given way. Chaloki is closing late in the middle of the racetrack. But Scat Daddy's done it again. He's won the Florida Derby.
Larry Colmus bringing them home in the 2007 running of the Florida Derby. Scat Daddy giving trainer Todd Pletcher the first of five victories in the race. That is a record. Nobody has won more. He'll look to add to that record later today and then hopefully find himself accepting a plaque in the Hall of Fame later this summer. We'll find out next month if Todd Pletcher is indeed inducted into the Hall of Fame. And if he's not, there better be an investigation. No way on earth Todd Pletcher is not a first ballot Hall of Famer. I told you already, he got my vote, and I hope he gets everybody else's too. Welcome back to the show. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Time to take a look at all the big races on what is a jam-packed stakes card at Gulfstream Park. Six graded stakes. You have the Rainbow Six, which is a mandatory pool that's estimated to be over $7.5 million. You have a $750,000 guaranteed pool in the late pick five and the late pick four. And somebody who will be swinging for the fences, I'm sure, is my good friend Ron Nicoletti. He is down at Gulfstream Park now, and he's with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, good morning. Happy Florida Derby Day.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself, my friend?
I'm doing good. You know, just a beautiful day, fast main track, firm turf course. What's better than that? So getting ready to kick off a fantastic afternoon of racing.
Do you think that Rainbow Six pool will top $7.5 million?
You know, they bet $9 million into it last year, you know, but we had a more full of fields, I think, and it was just that, you know, crazy time of year when the all racetracks just had closed down because of this COVID situation. So I think $7 million. These guys are so great at predicting. I'm always wrong. So I'm thinking $7 million would be right there, 7.5. I don't know how they came up with the 0.5.
Well, you know, the race 14, the final race on the program, is the Kierland Florida Derby. We'll talk about that one, but I thought it would be fun because you have your finger on the pulse of all these races, Ronnie, and I know you've looked at all of them, but I thought it would be cool to walk through all six of the greatest stakes races, and then if at the end, if we have a little time and there's a horse that we didn't talk about in a different race and you want to throw it out there for folks, we can do it that way too. But let's start by walking through the six greatest stakes. The first of those will come your way in race number six, which is the Grade 3 Kitten's Joy Appleton Stakes. 1 mile on the turf, a field of eight was entered. I haven't seen any scratches yet, so if anybody's out, just let us know. But the Appleton, how'd you see that one?
Yeah, we're still waiting for the scratches. They haven't quite come in yet. It'll probably be any moment. I went with Ever Dangerous, who's, I think, sitting on a winning performance after returning from that layoff, finished that. I thought it really a screw-tightening second in that 75 optional claimer going a mile for George Weaver, Edgar Zayas. It's the son of Kitten's Joy. So it looks like, you know, the race is named Kitten's Joy, so I thought maybe that was the way to go. You know, it's going to try and beat the favorite in there, Forceborn, who looks pretty t- tough in there as the Speedy Sonas fights down. And for people that have been watching the racing here at Gulfstream over the last couple of days, speed has been excellent on the turf course. So a horse like Firstborn might have a big, big shot in there. And I closed it out with Seismic Wave. He's a, you know, son of Tappet, going to Chad Brown for the first time. Hasn't been seen in a while. So he's a perfect 2-for-2 on the Gulfstream turf, though. So 4, 3, and 6, and number 8, excuse me, in the Appleton.
It seems like, Ronnie, every year when we talk about this race, because it can be a quick run into that first turn after the horses leave the gate, we're talking about post positions and how it impacts the race. But with a field of 8, is that really a concern in this race?
Not really. No, not really. And like I say, you know, you're going to get a horse like the 3 horse is just going to go out there and everybody will be able to, you know, who's if there's speed going with him and say you're post 8, you can go with him. But, you know, they'll probably fall in behind or just off a slank. And I don't see a problem with that. When you're dealing with 14 horses or 12 horses, yes, definitely.
Yeah, the second of the 6 greatest stakes is race number 8. That is the newly named Ghost Sapper Stakes, a grade 3, purse of 100,000. It's for the older horses going 1 1/8 miles on the main track and a field of 7 going in the Ghost Sapper. Last judgment from the rail, 9-5 on the morning line. He figures to take a lot of money, Ronnie.
Yeah, definitely. Last judgment, definitely. He won the Sunshine Classic here at this distance. He won it by 6.5 length stretches out at the Shift Link to Tampa to win the mile in the 16 Grade 3 Challenger and did it in front-running fashion. So Mike Maker has Jose Ortiz in the saddle today. Last judgment, I think War Stopper, who's a perfect 2-for-2 on the Gulfstream main track. One of the angles I sort of like, he was 3rd behind Last Judgment in the Challenger. 4 Todd Pletcher, you know he's going to take a ton of money. And Eye of the Jedi, the horse that just keeps running well, you know, low connection, famous connections, we'll put it that way, I think can grab a share. You know, ran good in the Fred Hooper, so I thought that horse can grab a share. But Last Judgment for me on top.
All right, Last Judgment from the inside. And again, Todd Pletcher has War Stopper 2-1 on the morning line under Irad Ortiz Jr. Ronnie, let me ask you before we get to the next race. Do you agree with me, and this may be a Captain Obvious type of question, but do you agree with me that Todd Pletcher is 1-9 to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, his first time on the ballot this year?
Oh, absolutely. I have my vote in. Of course I vote, and I voted him in. If he doesn't win it, then that's it. And I'm getting out of horse racing. I'll start taking painting houses up or something like that. He's definitely getting in.
Get that acting career fired up again.
Yeah, maybe that. Instead of painting houses, I wasn't thinking right.
Ron Nicoletti with me from Gulfstream Park here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, handicapping all of the greatest stakes. There are 6 of those on a loaded card at Gulfstream today. Race number 10 is the Grade 2 Pan American, 1.5 miles on the turf. This race is always fun. It's a field of 8 this year. Who wins the Pan American, Ronnie?
I think it's Cross Border, the one horse who's stretching out to the 12 furlongs in the first start. He finished that strong closing 3rd in the mile 3/16. That was the Grade 1 Pegasus turf. It's Mike Maker, Tyler Gaffleon, you know, 7-year-old son of English Channel. And I just finished going behind Colonel Liam and, of course, lodging in that race, you know, stretching out. He's tried the 1.5 miles a couple of times, finished 2nd in those 4 times that he tried it, but just looks like he sets up. He's got that tactical speed. He can get that position to see what unfolds in front of him. So on top of my ticket, the other interesting horse to me is, of course, the 7 Moon over Miami, who's stretching out. You have to come in, you know, turn from that layoff. I thought a well-man 3rd in the McDermott or the Grade 2 for Bill Mott. And what a meet Bill Mott has had. He's consistently been winning races about 30%. Junior Alvarado, who's just riding great here in South Florida, first time he's been here in many, many years. And, you know, you got the old knocker, you know, in here, Savage Joy, who always runs well, but he doesn't seem to ever win. So I went Cross Border, Moon over Miami, and, of course, Savage Joy somewhere on my try or super ticket.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up Sadler's Joy, 8-year-old son of Kitten's Joy, 35 starts, 7 wins, 4 seconds, 11 thirds. Ronnie, he's earned more than $2.6 million. I think anybody would love to own this horse, but you're right. He's a horse that always shows up, always runs his race, but doesn't always find himself in the winner's circle.
Yeah, the most amazing thing, if you look, you know, you're talking about this 1.5 miles, you know, you could count on you. two hands how many mile and a half races are run. He's 9-15 in the money at 12 furlongs. You're going to have some career to be able to do that in a country where we, you know, like courses that go a mile the most, you know, a mile and a 16th or something like that. So certainly a great record. And if he jumped up and win it, I'd be overjoyed.
Yeah, I think that would be fun to see. Three down, three to go. Race number 12. There are three greatest stakes in succession to round out the Florida Derby card. The last one is the Florida Derby as race 14. Race 12 is the Gulfstream Park Oaks Grade 2. This one for the three-year-old fillies prepping for the Kentucky Oaks. We are some 35 days away from the run for the Roses, which means 34 days away from the run for the Lilies. I think the girls get lost in the shuffle this time of year with all the Derby talk, but there are some good ones in this Gulfstream Park Oaks, Ronnie.
Yeah, this was the head-scratcher for me on the card. You know, I didn't know what, really which way to go. I mean, the morning line favorite, Crazy Beautiful, you know, from Kenny McPeak with Jose Ortiz and the Sally's great. She's great one stakes placed at the distance. I just found it wide open. You were talking about the Rainbow Six with the $7.5 million. This is where I'm spreading a little bit. I ended up going with the one Con Lima, who's been really impressive on the turf. He's returning to the main track with the speed, and the post needed to be a major speed factor when going the mile and a 16th on the main track. So I'm playing with the speed again, inside post. Todd Pletcher, you know, we talked about him. He's 1-9 to be in the Hall of Fame. He's solid with the turf, the dirt angle. And he's got Arad Ortiz, who's just about ready to break the record. He's got 136 victories. The record is 137. Luis Saez's record, and he's got ten of 14 races today, and all 12 races tomorrow Arad is riding. So I think the record is pretty safe that it's going to be broken. So I'm going with Con Lima, Crazy Beautiful, and Mille Fiori, maybe on the bottom, who's hoping to bounce back for Bill Mott. Just didn't run very well in Devona Dale. I just respect Bill so much. I think that horse might bounce back.
Yeah, this just in. That Ortiz kid is pretty good. And Con Lima, the top pick for Ron Nicoletti here in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. The Grade 3 Orchid is the race that will precede the Florida Derby. We stay with the ladies, but these are fillies and mares going a mile and three-eighths on the turf course. Another good race, Ronnie. How'd you see this one?
Well, talking about the Rainbow Six again, here's my single. I'm putting all my eggs in number nine, Always Shopping, who's turning back to 11 furlongs after following her victory in the mile and 3/16 in Via Borghese. Just an impressive score in La Proviante for Todd Pletcher. Irad going for three in a row. You know, I'm going to use Delta's Kingdom and Sister Hanama. This is the horse that is my best bet on the day. So hanging, like I said, all my troubles on this horse today.
Yeah, she's pretty tough. 3-for-4 over that Gulfstream Park turf. She looks like she could be a handful in there. And you mentioned the connection. She has the right connections with Todd Pletcher and Irad Ortiz Jr. So Always Shopping the single. That brings us to the main event, the Kirtland Florida Derby. The three-year-olds, greatest honor, going to take all the money in here. At least it looks that way anyways, Ronnie. Is it greatest honor and everybody else, or is there somebody else you like?
I went with greatest honor. I just, you know, trying to go around, and I just thought that this horse, you know, just watched the horse school in the paddock the other day, didn't turn a hair, just been working. You know, the horse is not a great worker, so a lot of guys, you're jumping on that, saying this horse didn't work any well. I mean, Shug McGay, he's one of my favorite trainers. He's done everything right with this horse, and this horse trying to become the first horse to win, you know, the Holy Bull, the Fountain of Youth, and the Florida Derby. It's never been done. This is the route that Shug took to get Auburn to the Kentucky Derby and win. And then, you know what, my analysis was done a couple of days ago. So I had Soup and Sandwich in second. And all of a sudden, everybody in America seems to be talking about, analysts on Twitter showing pictures of Soup and Sandwiches. The bottom line, I think this horse can run well. And I threw Collaborate in third. But, I'm going to go with Greatest Honor. I can't not go with her.
Right. You said something that shocked me, and I did not know this statistic. No horse has ever won the Holy Bull, the Fountain of Youth, and the Florida Derby?
Nope. We tried. We looked. We went. Now, don't remember that the Holy Bull was run after the Florida Derby years ago. So, you know, with a different name. So, you know, it's only been – the Holy Bull has only been in existence X amount of years. So, we tried. We looked all over, and it's not been done. So, That's a pretty interesting stat. Unless somebody could prove us wrong, that's what we're going with. We
yeah,
looked
tough
everywhere,
to...
you know, in all our statistics. So I'm pretty sure that's true.
I said earlier in the show, I was reading through some of the press releases that came out from Gulfstream Park this week, and I hadn't realized, and I was a little shocked to learn this too, that Bob Baffert will be saddling his first Florida Derby starter with Spielberg later today.
Yeah, that's not his game. You know, he ships all over. I mean, he comes here for maybe Breeders' Cup races, so he's not that. And with Spielberg, I put him further down on the ticket. It's just post 10, we're talking about the post. You know, you got that short run to the first turn. It just seems like the horse was never really pointing for here. I think it run well, and it's Bob Baffert. If he wins, no one in the world is going to be shocked. So I backed off. I'm taking a shot with Underneath Greatest Honor with Soup and Sandwich and Collaborate. We'll see what happens with that. But I can understand anybody using Spielberg.
What do you do with Known Agenda? He's the last horse to beat Greatest Honor, and I know he hasn't been in the best of form except for that last race where he romped and won by 11. What do you do with him?
Yeah, you know, we're talking about these connections, you know, the Todd Fletcher, Arad Ortiz. You know, we mentioned that he's going to win his 137th race sometime today, probably. Todd Fletcher, 5 Florida Derby victories, the only one to ever do it. Do you throw him out? You know, I did. Is that the right thing to do? You know, but I can understand that, too. And it's really interesting to see how the races play out this afternoon as far as the speed on the main track, speed on the turf. Interesting to see how it plays out.
Has the main track been playing to speed throughout the meet, Ronnie?
Yeah, always. You know, you'll always get a couple of days where, you know, all closes will come, you know, closing, and sometimes the reason is that the closes were just better. You know what I mean? And we've had some howling winds, and it's affected, you know, speed horses and everything. But at Gulfstream Park, I've been here a little over 30 years, and it's always been tilted towards speed. So you would think that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, Ron Nicoletti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, before I let you go, any other horse on the card that stood out to you that maybe we haven't talked about outside of the greatest stakes races?
Well, it comes into Cutler Bay, race number 11, 20-1 on the morning line. It's my long shot of the day, and it's the 7. It can be done, and I hope it lives up to his name. He's used his speed to win it a mile in the past. He stretches out. I like the return at 5 furlongs. He finished a late closing second. It's Greg Sacco, but you're getting Javier Castellano trying to steal this race from on or with the pace today. So that's my long shot in the car. I'm going to try and beat Annex in that race, but that's the one I'm going with, 20-1. Certainly going to be on my Rainbow Six tickets.
Yeah, and that mandatory payout in the Rainbow Six today, the pool estimated to be over $7.5 million by the folks at Gulfstream Park. You've got the $750,000 guaranteed pool in the late pick 5 and the late pick 4. So all kinds of opportunities to make some money at Gulfstream today. And Ron Nicoletti's been kind enough to walk through all the big races for you here on HRRN this morning. Ronnie, listen, man, really appreciate it. You're always so kind and generous whenever I text you and ask you to come on the program. And good luck at the windows today, my friend.
Yeah, good luck to you, too. Good luck to everybody out there. Have a great day.
All right,
day.
One of the true good guys in racing, Ron Nicoletti, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. Yeah, a lot of opportunities to make some money at Gulfstream today. No doubt. And my thanks to Ronnie for walking through all of those races. When I come back, you'll hear from Hall of Famer Bob Baffert sharing his thoughts on Spielberg and that latest performance. And still to come, In the Room with Sean Clancy. That begins hour number 3 at 10 o'clock Eastern. Sean sits down for a one-on-one conversation with retired jockey Richard Migliori. It's one you won't want to miss. Bob Edwards from E5 Racing will be with me at 10:25, and then at 10:45, you'll hear from trainer Mike Stidham looking ahead to today's Dubai World Cup. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear the vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select.
Well, as so many of you who have listened to this show over the past 15 years or so will know, I really have three true passions in life: horse racing, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the outdoors. So when I'm not at the racetrack or sitting in Heinz Field watching the Steelers play, it's a pretty solid bet that I'm out in the woods somewhere. So trust me when I tell you, if you love to hunt, if you love to fish, you need to check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. It's in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just about 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. The store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So if you go in there, you can spend some time talking about hunting and fishing, and then you can spend some time talking about horses with them too. They have everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. Turkey season right around the corner. Stop in and see the folks at the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. They even have two indoor archery ranges if you want to check out the new bows and maybe, you know, shoot a bow or two, or bring your bow down there and shoot for a while. You can do that at their two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Bob Baffert going to talk about Spielberg coming up in just a minute. I wonder if Spielberg finds himself in Bobby Newman's top five on this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. They're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
First off, Kentucky Derby favorite Life Is Good suffered a minor injury last weekend and is now off the Triple Crown trail.
On the racetrack, Fairgrounds hosted the Grade II Louisiana Derby last weekend, and Brad Cox's Mandaloon was sent off the 6-5 favorite. But it was the SoCal Invader Hot Rod Charlie who stole the headlines. He was put into play immediately by jockey Joel Rosario, took the lead from Midnight Bourbon as they approached the backstretch, and never looked back, scoring by two lengths and earning 100 Kentucky Derby qualifying points. Midnight Bourbon held the place to earn 40 points, while favored Mandaloon was dull and checked in sixth. There are five stakes on the Derby Trail this week. Gulfstream holds their marquee event, the Grade 1 Florida Derby. Greatest Honor enters riding a three-race win streak that includes the Holy Bull and Fountain of Youth, and he figures to be the solid favorite once again. He'll face a big field that includes Known Agenda, who comes off a monstrous allowance win and was actually the last horse to beat Greatest Honor. Bob Baffert sends out his first ever Florida Derby starter in Spielberg, who was last seen running second to two-year-old champ Essential Quality in the Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn. The Grade 3 Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway Park also goes today and offers 100 points to the winner. Tarantino ran well when facing Greatest Honor in Florida, and he figures tough to beat if he handles the synthetic surface. He faces the top four finishers from the John Battaglia Memorial: Hush of a Storm, Like the King, Gretzky the Great, and Hard Rye Guy. Stakes place runners Dynamite, Moonlight Strike, Smiley Sabatka, King's Ovation, and Awesome Jerry also have ability to contend. There are also three international races with points on the line: the UAE Derby today at Maidan in Dubai, the Fukuru Stakes at Nakayama in Japan, and the Cardinal Condition Stakes at Chelmsford City in the UK this Thursday. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mitoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated, the two-year-old champ from last year, running next in the Bluegrass at Keeneland April 3rd. Number two, Concert Tour, also undefeated, impressive winner of the Rebel last time out, looking at the Grade One Arkansas Derby on April 10th. Number three, Greatest Honor, winner of the Holy Bull and Fountain of Youth. He goes today in the Florida Derby. Number four is Risk Taking, winner of the Grade 3 Withers. He's looking at the April 3rd Wood Memorial at Aqueduct. And number five, Prevalence, undefeated, 2-for-2, looking at either the Santa Anita Derby, Arkansas Derby, Wood Memorial, or Bluegrass for his next start. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Well, Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert will saddle his first Florida Derby starter in Spielberg later today, and he's hoping that Spielberg can find a way to get back to his winning form. He talked about Spielberg, and he looked back on his disappointing effort in the Robert B. Lewis in this comment right now.
Yeah, Spielberg was very disappointing the race before, and just struggled all the way around there, and I loved his race at Oaklawn. He had a horrible start. Horse next to him was acting up, and when he acted up, then he was stepping back and got completely left at the start. So Martin just sat back there and let him finish. But it looked like, you know, he ran a very courageous race. He wasn't going to beat the winner, but you know, it was nice to see that. I think, you know, mile and eighth, mile and quarter, you know, he's going to be okay. So you know, I think he earned himself back into the little picture a little bit.
Well, and he can earn his way back into the picture in a big way with a win in the Florida Derby later today. That effort last time out that Bob alluded to, where he said he wasn't going to beat the winner, that winner was champion Essential Quality in the Southwest Stakes on February 22nd when Spielberg was second, and he'll be looking to do a bit better than that later today. If you're wondering about the top five in the Derby point standings right now, well, the leader in the pack is Hot Rod Charlie after that huge win in the Louisiana Derby. Congratulations to all those connections. Number two, Midnight Bourbon. Number three, Greatest Honor. Number four, Mandaloon. Number five is Concert Tour. So those are your top five. That picture will change over the next couple of weeks. We'll see others thrust themselves into the Derby picture with big wins in the 100-point prep races coming up, including that Kirtland Florida Derby later today. Well, time now for your KTA Kentucky Bred update. It is all happening here in Kentucky. More than $184 million has been awarded to Kentucky breeders for winning eligible races across the globe since 2006, including $14.3 million to breeders in 2020 from the Kentucky Thoroughbred Breeders Incentive Fund. In addition to a strong year-round racing circuit featuring the fullest fields in the country with purses exceeding $115 million in 2020, KBIF eligible Kentucky Breds won 245 graded stakes in the U.S. and 18 group races in Canada, England, France, and Ireland, including victories at the highest level by Authentic in the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic, and She Dares the Devil in the Kentucky Oaks, and of course, Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness. With results like this, why breed and race anywhere else? Kentucky Breds, breed them, race them, we all win. For information, visit KentuckyBreds.com or register KBIF.com. Well, that's about going to do it for the second hour of the program. Hour 3 kicks off next with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. It includes Bob Edwards and Mike Stidham. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219 XM 201 in Louisville, Kentucky on ESPN 680 or stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And here he comes now, greatest honor, finding his best ride right when he needs to. And he's going to run down, drain the clock, to win the Fountain of Youth.
The Fountain of Youth was another step that we wanted to try to pass. And, you know, Saturday in the Florida Derby will be another one. I think maybe the races are starting to play into our hand a little bit now. For greatest honor, going a mile and eight should suit him a lot better than a mile and 16th here on his short pole. So, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of getting him stretched out. But my philosophy is, unless we think we deserve to be there, we won't be there.
Mike Stidham, who joins us, first ever runner in Dubai. And the horse himself, just tell us a little bit about how he's shipped over. It must be quite a long journey from where you are.
It is. It's a long trip. And, you know, as a trainer, you always worry about all the things that can go wrong. And so far, it's been really good. The horse has come over here and he's really seems like he's flourishing and thriving on everything that's going on. The weather's great. The accommodations are amazing. So he's doing fantastic.
But Collaborate, he's running up the score. Look at him go. Collaborate, the son of Into Mischief, will break his maiden in style, turning more than a few heads in the process. Collaborate, long gone. He won by almost 10.
I think I like everything about him. There's not much to dislike him. He's a grand-looking horse. You look at him and the way he stands and his presence, the height, his size, when he works. I mean, he's everything. I think he's most definitely the most talented horse that we've ever had in our hands. His ability is... There's a lot of ability.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland Select. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of this Saturday morning Equine Forum show rolls on, and it's going to be a busy third hour of the show. Plenty of conversations surrounding both the Florida Derby and the certainly the Kentucky Derby, but the Dubai World Cup, which comes your way at 12:50 Eastern today. So, awful lot of things to get to in this third hour of the program, including Sean Clancy's one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with retired rider Richard Migliori. That will be just moments away. Poll question today. Threw this out at the top of the show. So many of you have taken time to go to our Twitter feed and let me know your thoughts, but the poll question is kind of a prop bet with Greatest Honor expected to be a huge favorite in today's Florida Derby. And Ron Nicoletti, you heard him in the last half of the program, in the last hour, talking about the fact that no horse has ever won the Holy Bull, the Fountain of Youth, and the Florida Derby. That is the task and the assignment facing Greatest Honor later today. But the poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference, who wins today's Florida Derby? Gave you Greatest Honor or the field? You can have everybody else or you can take the favorite Greatest Honor. It's pretty close. It's been close throughout. 52% of you saying you'll take the field over Greatest Honor. That's a switch from last hour when Greatest Honor was in the lead. But you can go to @HRN on Twitter to let me know your thoughts there. You can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And, of course, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of this show or any of our shows, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. You can also do that Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way to listen to us. If you can't catch the entire show live, make sure you do that. And looking forward to all the conversation coming up here in the last hour of the program. I told you it kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy. That's all presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. Again, this week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one conversation with retired jockey Richard Migliori.
Four length lead now by five, but they're coming down to the finish. Brilliantly ridden on the front end by Richard Migliori. Brilliantly ridden by Richard Migliori. Richard Migliori.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with the MIG, retired jockey Richard Migliori. The 56-year-old won 4,450 races over a stellar 30-year career, starting with an Eclipse Award as leading apprentice in 1981 and rolling through meet titles on the New York circuit, a Breeders' Cup win aboard Desert Code, stakes wins on the likes of Student Council, Friends Lake Win, Artie Schiller, Hidden Lake, and the one and only Four-Star Dave. Welcome to the show, Richie.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, well, when you hear those names, you know, kind of brings me back, and certainly Four Star Dave is a horse you and I both had a lot of affection for. You got to gallop him, I got to ride him, the Sultan of Saratoga.
No, he was the best. I mean, I love the way you rode him. You would be aggressive. I mean, he's kind of your type of horse, right? Be aggressive, put him up in the race.
Well, I always believed in getting your position going forward, you know, particularly the era of riders that I came around in with, you know, I should say, you know, Angel Cordero, Jacinto Vasquez, you know, all these guys, they got their position going forward and they fought for position, you know, guarded the inside jealously. You know, it seems a little bit different now. Maybe, you know, I'll come off sounding like the old guy back in my day, but...
we are old.
Well, no, you know, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. And it goes by fast, too, but... you know, it was a privilege to, you know, be an apprentice with a room full of Hall of Famers like that and basically learn to ride by, you know, just watching, observing their habits, how they approach things, what they did, and certainly schooling you. You'd learn your lessons, and if you didn't learn, then you just had no aptitude for it because you were riding with the best.
Yeah, who were your idols growing up? I mean, before you started riding and then in the room, who did you really watch and try to emulate?
Well, when I was a kid, I mean, Shoemaker was an obvious, you know, he was such a, you know, mainstream guy beyond just being a jockey. He was on commercials and the Tonight Show. And I remember when I was 10, I already knew I wanted to be a jockey. Everybody, you know, kid growing up in Brooklyn wants to be a jockey. Everybody thought I had a screw loose or like, you know, I was, it was a phase, I guess. But my grandfather gave me the book, The Shoe, It had all these incredible pictures of Shoemaker and you know, Santa Anita, and it just captured my imagination. And my grandfather inscribed, "I'm sure you'll do as well as him." And I, obviously, that would have been an incredible, lofty goal. But just the fact that, you know, about 5 years after my grandfather gave me that book, I'm getting the Eclipse Award by Shoemaker, which, it happened pretty quick.
Right, for sure. Yeah, very different style, though. I mean, he was little and light, and you were much taller. I mean, who did you try to emulate style-wise?
Well, you know, I used to look at Baeza a lot before I started riding because everybody talked about him being taller and angular, and that was certainly me. And then when I first started riding, Cassius Musen had won the Eclipse Award the year before me, and he was tall, and I loved the way his seat. I loved the way he... you know, folded up on a horse. There was so many angles, but that's what you had to do to manage your height. And then in the room, there were so many influences. I mean, Eddie Maple was a tremendous influence for me. We had the same valet for years. you know, I could be mercurial. I could be, you know, win five and I'm over the moon and get beat on a favorite and looking to fight somebody and upset. And one day he looked at me, and I was still a kid, probably 18 or something, and he said, "Okay, you got beat on a couple of favorites today," because I was mad. And he was, "What are you going to do tomorrow morning?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to get up early. I'll be at the track. I'm getting on horses." And he's, "Okay, what if you had won five today? What would you be doing tomorrow morning?" And I still get up early, go to the track, get on. He goes, "So why don't you just take it in stride? Just be even." And, you know, they called him Steady Eddie for a reason. Even, you know, dieting. I'd obsess about food. And he looked at me one day and said, "You know, food's always going to be there." And it kind of just put it in a different perspective for me. But Eddie certainly was that kind of influence in the room for me.
Yeah, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently? I mean, would you have, we've talked about it over the years, would you have not been, it seemed like, I think you were used to press and really be, I mean, really try to show everybody, you know, I think that was part of your talent too. I think it's part of why you got where you did, but now with perspective, what would you do anything differently?
Yeah, I definitely would. I definitely tried to make things happen, particularly if I was, I won't even say slumping, just maybe struggling a little bit. I was going to create. I wasn't going to let it come to me. I was going to go make it happen. And you know, you're talking about a relationship with your horses and animal, and sometimes I would get lost with that a little bit. I got better at it the last few years of my career. And honestly, frankly, working with Godolphin and those kind of horses the last 2 years of my career, I had come full circle. Like when I was a kid, I was more of a horseman. In the middle of my career, I was more of a jockey. And then at the end of my career, last 2 years of my career, honestly, I felt like I was back to being the horseman. I'm more proud of myself, more proud of how I was approaching it, how I was doing it. Even when I had great success, looking back now, you know, and obviously the benefit of hindsight and clarity, there was a point where the horse was just a vehicle to get me to the winner's circle. And I really don't look back at that with pride, even though I was having tremendous, success. I just didn't think I was respecting my relationship with the horse as much as I should have been.
And that's something you learned as you went along, I guess. I mean, that is something you kind of had to recognize and almost take a step back. And maybe you were even better when you did take that step back slightly.
Well, I'm certainly much prouder of the rider I was, you know, when I got through that period. You know, I came up under contract to Steve DeMauro, and you really did bring him out. You know, so much so that I won the Eclipse Award, and the next day I'm in the barn at 5 o'clock in the morning because I still rubbed the pony. So I had to get the pony stall done and get him tacked up. And that was, you know, back then I probably didn't appreciate that. I probably resented some of the things I had to do. And now I'm so happy that I had that experience and understanding how he taught me to be a horseman, a horse person, and not just a jockey and not take it for granted, understand the process. But like I said, then in the middle of my career, you know, here I am, in the middle of my career, like 4 or 5 years into my career, I was, you know, I'm the MIG, I'm a jockey, I got to win. I won almost 300 races in 1985 at 20 years old, but that's not one of my proudest seasons, I have to be honest. Like I said, later on, I was always comfortable, Sean, riding for a stable and being a part of that stable because of my upbringing under contract and being a key member of the team. And being at the barn every morning. I excelled when I rode, you know, first call for Hushing because I was involved. First call for Kimmel, I was involved. And one day Rick Mattee had a horse out on the track. He was Saeed Bin Sarur's assistant in the States for Godolphin. And the horse had bolted and was running off down the outside fence with the exercise rider. And he turned to me and said, "I think I got to tell them to bring this horse home. He's one for one in England, but he's just uncontrollable." And I asked him to get on the horse. And I said, "You know, I'd like a crack at him. He goes, "You want to get on that thing?" Because this horse was going 90 miles an hour down the outside fence. And I said, "Yeah, I think I might be all right with him, you know." And I worked him a week later, and I was not on the outside fence, but I wasn't on the inside fence. I was probably in the middle somewhere. and came back. What do you think? I think, you know, let me give this another try. And it was a little better. Well, the horse wound up being Afrashad, and he won the fall highweight. He won the Moseley at Suffolk. And, you know, he actually came around, and he and I got on pretty good. And that led me to getting the mount with Flashing. But the reason I brought all that up was that was the scenario I think I thrived in, that, you know, go to the barn, talk about the horses, get on them, you know, come up with little different insights, different ideas, and have a familiarity that a lot of times when you're riding a, you know, 1,000 races a year or 1,500 races a year, you just don't have the time to create that relationship.
Oh, for sure. That's the really rewarding part of being a jockey is when you're more involved and almost part of the team and almost training the horse a little bit, not picking out races, but just trying to develop a horse. And I think that's what you had certainly at the beginning and the end, I guess. So your career kind of came full circle in that respect.
It really did. And I'm, you know, listen, I really didn't want to stop riding. And like I lamented a few times to my wife early on about, well, you know, I would have loved to have, you know, won a nice race, felt just that satisfaction, hopped off, gave the horse a pat, and that was, you know, that's the end of it. And she looked at me and laughed. She said, "You were never going to do that. You were going to ride until they made you stop." And that's what happened. So,
right.
And she's right.
Yeah, there's a fine line between, and I think I walked that fine line too. You know, when I was riding, when I would get down about anything, life, who I was, what was happening about my career, I would actually look ahead and say, oh, but I'm riding to Ridley on Saturday, and if he wins, that'll pick me back up and I'll feel good again. And now looking back, I don't have those kind of things. I almost wonder if that played into the imbalance of who we are. And I just wonder if that's something that when you're riding, you're always looking for the next win, and the win and the losses are kind of, it's almost like a ricochet between those two. And then you retire and you don't have that to try to balance yourself, although I think it's completely unbalanced, but you don't have that. Is that something that you've struggled with or thought about when you rode or now? I mean, is that something you kind of have to figure out other ways to remain balanced or get your balance back?
Well, I think that balance is elusive for everybody. I think that's one of the keys to life is finding a balance, you know, of doing the things you have to do, the things you like to do, you know, being well-rounded. And when I was a rider, I had absolutely no balance whatsoever in that respect. You know, I was blinkers on and, you know, looking at life through a keyhole, basically. And not even really acknowledging or understanding that in that moment, I can look back on it now and see it. It wasn't an easy way to live, you know, between making weight and, you know, if I was riding 9 the next day and had a workhorse in the morning, I was going to be in bed at 9. And even if I wasn't sleepy, lay there and try to will myself to sleep because I've got to get more sleep because I'm on 9. You know, when you have children, it certainly, you know, changes your perspective and you look at things differently. You know, I was a rider that, you know, through my career, I would purge. I would eat and have to go get rid of it because I just wasn't able to make weight. And then when you have kids, you don't come home and sit down and eat for, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes, and then go do what you have to do and then come out and be dad. I recognize that they don't care if I won 5 today or I got beat on 5 favorites or I've got to make weight or I'm tired. They're just happy dad's home. So I quit doing that at the house, at least. You know, I gained control of that, where if I did it, it was once a day, not 3 times a day. Or, you know, and it was mostly because my kids brought me out of that, going, they don't, you know, I can't force my career onto their lives and make it, you know, more difficult to be a kid in my house. I mean, then I came to this realization: you can fail as a jockey, but you can't fail as a father, and you can't come back from that. You know, at least, you know, as a jockey, I've got, you know, other opportunities. I'll somewhere it'll work out. But honestly, my kids made me a better person because I was just so selfish and so self-centered about my career.
Wow. Well, you didn't fail as a jockey, and you haven't failed as a father either, so you've done well in both. One last question, and this is one I borrow from my favorite podcast, How I Built This. But when you look back at your success, how much of it was hard work, talent, and how much of it was luck? I mean, what when you look back at your career?
I think the majority of it, you know, I think it's a confluence of all of those things, but the majority of it was hard work. I was not a natural rider. I was not built to be a jockey. I really had to force my body into, that role. And, you know, and it was great. I mean, I was lucky in the respect that I, hooked on with Steve DeMauro very young. To have him coming off of years with Wajima and Dealey Precious and winning the Eclipse Award, for him to open up his shed row and put me under contract gave me instant credibility in people's eyes. And then he really had a plan for me. Like everything, like I said, that I probably didn't understand so much when I was young, and I'd get, you know, upset about something and why isn't he letting me ride yet? Or why isn't this happening? He was thoughtful about it, and he basically mapped out my career and how it was going to go and teaching me. And frankly, I grew up in his barn. He was, you know, like a surrogate father to me. So that was extremely lucky. And then I think anybody who has any success in any athletic endeavor has to have a certain inherent amount of natural ability. But I think, you know, you and I have spoken, and I was pretty depressed for a while about not being able to ride anymore, particularly when I felt physically better, that, you know, like, well, why can't I do this? I was going someplace with this. And, oh, see how many concussions I get?
I can match you, too. I can go one for one with you. Don't worry.
No, but basically, looking back on it and knowing that I was able to get the most out of the ability that I had, that whatever gifts God gave me, I didn't leave anything out there. I put it all out there and did the very best I could with whatever God-given ability I had. And that's the only thing that was able to kind of get me out of that depressed feeling of, well, you know what? I couldn't have done more. If I had been a guy that kind of gave it a half effort and knew that I could have done better with my career, rode more winners or done something different, that I couldn't live with. That I think I would still be depressed over it. And I tell kids this, you know, young riders, I talk to them all the time. There is a day that it'll be your last ride. For every athlete, there's a baseball player, last at bat, football player, last play. Hopefully it's like Jerry Bailey, Chris McCarron, Pat Day, when you decide you've had enough. Majority of guys don't get to make that decision. You don't want to look back on it when it's over, because when it's over, it's over. That was your last ride that I could have done better, because there's not a do-over. And it's just important to make the most out of your abilities and be the best you can be.
No doubt. You did that better than anybody. We lost Steve DeMauro last summer. If you could have one last conversation with him, what would you say to him?
Well, I'm so blessed that we had dinner the previous summer at Saratoga. And he turned to me during the dinner and said, I want you to know how proud I am of you. That he goes, you know, you are a tremendous rider, and I'm so happy you retired. I didn't want to see you get hurt anymore. But what you've been able to do since your career ended, he goes, I watch you, and I can't tell you how proud I am of you. And I can't say how much that meant to me. And that we had at least that opportunity to have a conversation about not me as the kid who came up in his barn as a jockey, but the man that he helped shape.
That's Richie Migliori. Steve DeMauro and all of us are proud of you, and it was a joy to watch your career, and we're thankful you're still involved in the sport.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
As good as it gets right there. If you missed any of that interview with Richard Migliori or last week's interview with Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez or any of the In the Room segments with Sean Clancy, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. click on the shows tab at the top of the page. It will take you to a special page only for those In the Room segments. You can listen to all of them at your leisure, and I highly recommend it. They are fantastic, and all proceeds, 20% of all proceeds from sponsorship involved with that segment will go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. So trying to give back through In the Room with Sean Clancy and so many of those riders who have given us so many top moments over the years. My thanks to Richard for taking time this morning. When I come back, we'll talk some Florida Derby with E5 Racing's Bob Edwards. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Select.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus after you bet $300 and $50 for every $5,000 wagered with code HRRN10 at KeenelandSelect.com or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
Good Magic is now moved up into second, and then it's the tabulator. Bolt Doro has been very wide on both turns. He'd have to be way the best to win from here. They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solo Mini, and Bolt Doro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile under Jose Ortiz. He won it by 5.5 lengths. Solo Mini was second. Bolt Doro wide on both turns. Third, Give Me a Minute was fourth.
Good job, buddy.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented this morning by Keeneland Select. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch with you. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the 2017 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Good Magic getting the victory for Bob Edwards and his E5 Racing under Jose Ortiz. And it's one of my favorite sound bites and race calls. Not even so much because Larry did a fantastic job, but not because of what Larry did, but because of that reaction of Jose Ortiz that was caught by the microphones after the race. Maybe that was actually Bob Edwards yelling from the clubhouse. I don't know, but he's with me now. We can ask him. He's here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bob, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. A little trip down memory lane for you there as we welcome you to the program. Was it you yelling or Jose Ortiz?
I'm listening to it as I'm coming in. I just get goosebumps listening to Larry make that call. you know, breaking a maiden in the Breeders' Cup. You know, great call by Chad.
Fantastic. You know, and you've been part of a few Breeders' Cup winners now, and as somebody who hasn't been in the game all that long, do you sometimes just kind of take a look in the mirror and pinch yourself, Bob, and say, is this really happening?
All the time, yeah. It's been a really fun ride, and, you know, I thought, you know, after Rushing Fall retired, we would be irrelevant for a long period. You know, it's a tough game to collect wins, especially at the high level.
When did you buy your first horse?
About 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
I think we're going about year six.
Yeah. Yeah, and to be competing at this level day in and day out is pretty remarkable. What's been the key?
Teamwork. Teamwork makes a dream work. You know, I have a phenomenal team of, you know, Mike Ryan obviously, you know, picks my horses out for me. They go to Stone Street for the most part up in Ocala, and Ian Brennan and his crew do a phenomenal job. And then, you know, then we kind of pick the trainer that we feel suits him. We've had a really good run with Chad, and still have horses with him and still load him up this year. Savvy's done really well with us. You know, I've been lucky, really lucky.
Your story is a little different than most because it's not like you grew up in the sport or grew up around the sport wanting to be involved. You kind of fell into it 6 years ago in a different fashion, right?
Yeah, my wife's from Saratoga, so her whole family is from Saratoga. And, you know, we went to school in Plattsburgh, so we'd spend some time in Saratoga and go to the races. And then, you know, as we moved to Florida and had kids, we'd go up for family reunions and sit on a cooler out by the picking tables, drinking some cheap beer and picking horses by their name was about as much as I knew.
So what led you to eventually say, you know what, I want to be an owner in this sport?
So I had a partner, a business partner, lived on Fifth Ave, and he asked my daughter Cassie and I to go over to his house. He wanted to take us to the backside, which I'd never been, was in for it. And we walked, and, you know, just to see all the care and all the time that goes into these equine athletes, you know, it was phenomenal, right? It just gave you a whole new perspective on what goes on, you know, behind closed doors on the backside. And we kind of rolled into that auction, and that's where I was introduced to Mike Ryan. And Mike spent, you know, a day with my daughter and I just kind of going through confirmation. Didn't know us from anything. I dressed like I normally dress in Vans and cargo shorts and a baseball hat. And, you know, he spent the whole day kind of going through this. And, you know, we made a conscious decision to take a stab at it and buy a horse. You know, we bought a New York bred and, you know, thought everything was going to happen, you know, for us, and we were going to be champs. And, you know, the stats didn't look like that after the auction, and kind of spent a lot of time going through the auction books, looking at pedigrees, copious amounts of hours, just kind of trying to understand, you know, what we wanted to be and what we wanted to do. And, you know, Mike went to Keeneland, the yearling auction after Saratoga, and picked us up that first crop that had New Money Honey in it.
That's a great story. What's the number one lesson that Bob Edwards has learned that you would pass along to somebody that's looking to get into the game as an owner?
I mean, it is a great sport with great people. You know, when we first got in it, didn't know a lot, right? I didn't know, you know, how big the Breeders' Cup was until they said, hey, turn around, they want to take a picture of you. And there were 100 photographers taking pictures. I guess, you know, don't be shy, right? We had a lot of people kind of pointing us in the right direction. The folks at FaZe kind of really took us under their wing and kind of introduced us to a lot of people and kind of helped us. And, you know, everybody's helped us along the way. So it's a really great sport, really great people. You know, I think at any level somebody can come in and really enjoy this.
You are such a great family man, too. And the name E5 reflects your entire family. Tell me more about that.
So there's five Edwards, myself, my wife, Chris, my daughter, Cassidy, my daughter, Delaney, my son, Riley, all five of us. And that's kind of how we kind of rolled into it. Also, my pharma company, E5 Pharma, and then went to the post office screwing up the mail. So we figured it all come to one spot.
Yeah, it's great. And you've been able to surround yourself with great people, have great success. Are all of the kids interested in horse racing, too?
My daughter, obviously, loves horse racing. You know, she'd rather be involved in racing all day than the pharma side, but she does have to do the pharma side as well. The other two, they like big days. You know, they'll come down for a race if it's of consequence, but they don't like it as much as my daughter. But they do like Saratoga. They do like Keeneland. You know, they like to go to California if we have a big race there. So they do enjoy it. But my wife's folks enjoy it. You know, her whole family, her extended family loves it. So we always have a big party that our entourage that rolls with us when we go to these big days.
What do you remember about the day you won your first race?
First race I won was a stakes race, was Zendaya, the Intercontinental. It was her second race for us. And, you know, we rolled up to New York and were, you know, super excited to have an opportunity. And you know, she fired. It was exciting. I had no idea what to expect. You know, I had like a sloppy sport coat on, a pair of Vans and khakis. You know, I had no idea what to expect. And it was, what a great feeling. You know, Javier piloted first horse there, and we just had an unbelievable opportunity to take a win off a mare that we bought at the Keeneland November sale, and that was our first win. That's how we started.
Wow, and it's off and running from there. And your enthusiasm, Bob, your enthusiasm for the sport is infectious. You listen to you talk, you can hear it in your voice. You get upbeat when you start talking about all these great horses that you've been around. You have another good one today in the Curlin Florida Derby in Collaborate, who last time out broke his maiden by 12 lengths and just looks so impressive. This horse could be any kind, couldn't he?
You know, he is something special. You know, as a yearling, when we saw him at Saratoga, and he was a monster then. I think he's probably tipping the scales around 1,200 pounds. But he moves, you know, he moves like a butterfly. He really does. He just kind of skips over the surface. He extends really well. You know, he's got to win, you know, for obvious reasons, right? But, you know, he seems to have, you know, everything you're looking for in that, you know, that big kind of, you know, take you to the next level colt.
What do you remember about the first time that you got a chance to see him at that phase at Tipton Sale?
We were looking at another horse, and, you know, I saw him come out to the left, and, you know, he's strapping, big, big horse. And, you know, check the pedigree into Mischief, really big into Mischief. You know, you want to see it, right? You don't typically see him that big. And we started looking at him, and, you know, he was just skipping on the surface. And I said, Mike, you know, can we knock this horse for anything outside of his size? I mean, he's big. He's into Mischief. You know, he just looks like he's, you know, he looks like a dressage horse. Like he's just kind of skipping around. And, you know, we ended up, you know, getting on the horse and our friends at Three Chimneys stayed in, which was great. You know, my model, as you know, is typically, you know, fillies and mares. And we buy a colt or two a year and try to partner up with, you know, great farms like Barbara Stone Street or Three Chimneys. And it's kind of how it played out for us, and lucky to have him.
Yeah, Bobby Flay has that same philosophy. I've talked to him many times, and he talks about the fact that he likes to focus his operation on the ladies, the fillies and the mares. And every once in a while, if he gets involved with a good colt, that's great. But it's more about the fillies and the mares. Why is that a smart move, Bob?
I don't know if it's a smart move, but it's a move. We breed them too, right? So I have 23 or 24 mares right now. 19 or so in Kentucky, one in Florida, and a couple in Ireland. So, you know, we like to breed them, right? So if we have something special that we think, we try to buy horses with you know, well-bred, with good pedigrees. And if we have an opportunity to breed them and carry on and race homebreds or sell homebreds, that's kind of what we do. So that's part of the filly and mare experience for us.
We heard a soundbite earlier in the show from trainer Safi Joseph Jr., who I've become very good friends with over the years. And he is so excited about this horse, Collaborate. He said he's probably the nicest horse that he has ever had in his care.
That's a lot said. He's a phenomenal trainer, great family guy. You're talking about E5 family. Safi's family's all in too, which is great to have and great to see. You know, he sent me a video the other day of the horse just completely laying down, chilling out, just relaxing, not wasting any energy. And, you know, all the good ones that we've had have done that same thing where, you know, they just don't waste energy. They got really good minds. They lay down their stall. They mind their own business. And then when it's coming to work, you know, they come and give it their all. So, you know, he's a horseman. You know, I'm a horse owner. It's a big difference. And, you know, he knows talent way better than I do. I can evaluate it at my level. But when I hear something, you know, that Safi says, and he says, you know, this horse is, you know, the best horse I've given him, one of the best he's had, you know, it's great to hear.
There's another family tie involved with Collaborate, and that is the jockey, Tyler Gaffalione. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, he's not a bad kid, you know. No, I'm just kidding. Tyler has been dating my daughter Cassie for a couple of years now. You know, he's part of our extended family. It's great to have him, you know, obviously on the horse, but it's great to have him as part of our family too.
So if for some reason he gets this horse in trouble today and has all kinds of a rough trip and doesn't get the horse to the winner's circle, do you turn to him and say, okay, that's it? You're not dating my daughter anymore?
Let me tell you, Tyler is going to be tougher on himself than I could ever be, and that's not my job. And he knows the horse, you know, better than I ever would. And, you know, he's going to do his best. Obviously, this would be a big race for him, you know, a Florida boy. You know, I know it's on his bucket list of races to win. The Florida Derby is something that he's been looking at for many years. And, you know, he's like all these guys. I mean, they're all true professionals. They don't like to lose. They're really good competitors. And, you know, you don't have to point out something. They all know.
Yeah, one of the guys that you've had a ton of success with is Hall of Famer Javier Castellano, who is one of the real good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Tyler is too. What makes top riders like Javier and Tyler so good?
I mean, it's dedication to the game, dedication to the sport, dedication to their body, right? You know, these guys are athletes. They have to spend time, you know, taking care of themselves. And, you know, you can see that the guys that take care of themselves have these really long careers, and they can bounce back and they just continue to win. And I mean, you know, these guys, they're the best in the business. I mean, these guys are the Hall of Fame team. This Colony of Jockeys is the Hall of Fame group of, you know, of jockeys, the all-star group of jockeys that travel the country.
And talking with Bob Edwards, E5 Racing, their Collaborate 6-1 on the morning line in this afternoon's Curlin Florida Derby. He'll get a test as the waters get deeper after breaking his maiden, but he did it very impressively, and he really could be any kind. Bob, do you even let yourself think about what it could be like on the first Saturday in May if this horse were to take you there and somehow find a way to cross the finish line first that day?
You know, I'm compartmentalizing. There's a lot of hurdles to get to that point. You know, even if we're fortunate enough to get some points today, you know, it's pins and needles. That phone rings, you panic. It's like, you know, this time of year, you got babies up in Ocala breaking. You don't want a phone call from them. You got babies dropping up in Kentucky. You don't want a phone call from them. And, you know, you have a really nice horse here that could, you know, that the sky's the limit. You don't want to call from your trainer that's in an odd time. So, you know, it's nerve-wracking as much as it is fun.
Yeah, I won't ask you to give away the entire strategy today, but last time out when you stretched him out to a mile, he went wire to wire. Nobody could catch him. Would that be kind of what you're thinking about today, or does it just depend on how the race unfolds? Well, I guess there really is no strategy involved with Collaborate today. Just let him roll. Who knows? Looks like we may have dropped the call with Bob Edwards. We'll try to reconnect with him momentarily. Collaborate did it so easily on the front end last time out. You have to wonder if that's going to be the strategy today or if they decide to take him back a little bit. He was finishing well in his maiden race over that sloppy track at Gulfstream, 6 furlongs on February 6th. He was running well at the end that day, so I don't think he's a horse that needs the lead. I just think that he was just better than everybody else in that maiden win. So more than likely, I would imagine that Bob would say that they would see how the race unfolds and let Tyler make the call as they get into it. I'll tell you what we'll do. We're just about out of time, so I will go ahead and get to a final commercial break here, or another commercial break. When I come back, you're going to hear from Mike Stidham talking about the Dubai World Cup favorite, but we'll thank Bob Edwards for his time today. Always a delight to have him on the program. He's fantastic. That interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Back to hear from Mike Stidham next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Select.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretariat Stakes.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 Poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But close to home, it's Travel Column. Travel Column to win the Fairgrounds Oaks handily.
Travel Column sizzled to victory in the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks last weekend,
her time, the fastest since 1997. That's faster than Rachel Alexandra, a Shadow, and Silver Bullet Day. Pretty good company. And that brilliant win makes Travel Column your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Frosted, Tappet's highest earner in North America. Frosted's first crop includes Kentucky Oaks Bound, Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks winner, Travel Column, Grade 2 Remsen and Grade 3 Nashua runner-up, 10 for 10, Grade 2 Santa Ynez runner-up, Frosteria, and TDN Rising Star, Inject. Learn more about Frosted and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
50 metres left to run, and Gunrunner showed the way. Nearly picks a half length away, second. One and a half lengths to move the hedge, and here comes the big A. Arrogate on the outside. Gunrunner in front of Neolithic, but Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 metres left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner. A is for Arrogate. A is for Absolute Superstar. A is for Anointing. Have we seen the anointing of the man of war of the 21st century? Arrogate, a brilliant winner of the Dubai World Cup. From Gunrunner and Neolithic.
What a call, what a race. Arrowgate winning the 2017 Dubai World Cup under Mike Smith for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. The last U.S.-based horse to win the World Cup. You remember in 2018 and 2019, it was Thunder Snow who took home the top honors. There was no race last year, canceled due to COVID. But back this year, coming up at 12:40 Eastern, the $12 million Dubai World Cup Mystic Guide for Mike Stidham, hoping to put the Americans back on the winning side of things. Mike Stidham met with the media in Dubai earlier this week, and here's what he had to say.
Well, our final press conference this morning is with the trainer of the favorite for the Dubai World Cup. A welcome here to Mike Stidham, who joins us. First ever runner in Dubai. Not a bad way to kick off, Mike, with a favorite in the big race of the evening.
It's a great feeling.
And the horse himself, just tell us a little bit about how he's shipped over. It must be quite a long journey from where you are.
It is. It's a long trip. And, you know, as a trainer, you always worry about all the things that can go wrong. And so far, it's been really good. The horse has come over here and he's really seems like he's flourishing and thriving on everything that's going on. The weather's great. The accommodations are amazing. So he's doing fantastic.
And as we said, a long trip to come over, your first runner here in Dubai. What kind of work did you do or preparations did you put in to find out about what it's like to ship a horse over that kind of a distance?
Well, I had mentioned earlier that I'm at the fairgrounds in New Orleans, and Steve Asmussen and Scott Blasey are right across the road from me stabling at the fairgrounds. And I definitely spent a few mornings over there just asking some odds and ends, and it was very helpful. They were both very helpful.
And as we say, you've been training for a long time, but has it just been a case of the quality of horses coming through the barn has improved in recent years to give you this sort of an animal to come across here and be competitive?
Without a doubt, ever since this is my fifth year training for Godolphin, and the quality of horses there is just, you know, superb. It's amazing, and it's a wonderful opportunity, and I'm honored to get that opportunity.
And just talk us through the horse's career with you. Has he always impressed you and always shown you a lot of ability?
So he came to us a little late. We usually get our two-year-olds in the spring and summer of their two-year-old year, and Mystic Guide was a little bit behind. Came into us like real early three-year-old, and he had some pre-training from Johnny Burke at Keeneland. And so first time we worked him, he was like one of those wow horses. We knew that there was talent there. We didn't know how much, but we definitely said wow from the first work. And you know, we got him ready, and the only reason we sprinted him in his first start as a maiden was because it was Louisiana Derby weekend. Our choices were either six furlongs or a mile and an eighth for his first race, and I didn't feel like a mile and an eighth was the right thing to do. So six furlongs, got a good experience out of it, came closing to be third, and then came right back won impressively in his second start going a mile and 16th.
Okay, and the run last time he's managed to win on his way over here, that must bring him here at the top of his game with his confidence high.
Well, he was really going the right way for us late in his three-year-old year when he won the Peter Pan and then was second in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And then we just freshened him a little. He never left the racetrack, but we did freshen him and just gave him some light work and then started him out. Actually, we would have started him earlier, but they kept postponing the race at Oaklawn because of weather. And when he did make that start in the on the sloppy track, he was ultra impressive.
He's drawn stall six. How pleased are you with that? And where do we expect to see him in the run through the race?
Well, Mike Adolfsson had asked me what was my preference. I said anywhere in the middle. So there we are. We're near the middle. We're near the middle. So I'm happy to be there. Going a mile and a quarter, I really would love to see him break well, be forward, and just be in a comfortable stalking position, you know, depending on how fast they're going in front of him. But that's where he's most comfortable, in some type of a stalking spot.
And Louis Rhodes, last time out, that was a partnership you feel that's gelled well, you wanted to keep intact?
Well, certainly, you know, he handled him well in that race. He kept him out from behind all the kickback in the mud, and you know, the horse handled the track well, but he seemed to really get along well with him, and I'm happy to have him back.
And how special for you is it to be here, 25th anniversary of the Dubai World Cup? Normally we'd see Godolphin horses in the race trained by Saeed or Charlie, but to be here in Dubai on such a momentous moment for the Dubai World Cup and to race in front of his Highness on Saturday.
Well, as I said, it's an honor and a privilege to be here, and especially training a horse for Sheikh Mohammed on the 25th anniversary. Could not be better, and just can't wait to get on the racetrack.
Okay, well, to questions from the floor. If anybody's got a question for Mike, there's a microphone doing the rounds. Dwayne?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Good luck, first of all, coming to Dubai. And what actually made you bring the horse here? I mean, he looks amazing. He looks probably one of the best horses out there. What actually drove you to, you know, think, like, let's go with him?
So obviously, being owned by Godolphin, this was a race that was in the back of our minds. But obviously, there's other horses owned by Godolphin that were possible for the race, one of those being Maxfield. And, you know, we have weekly phone conversations with Jimmy Bell. And Jimmy and I and Hillary Pridham, my assistant, we sit down and we discuss all the possibilities. And after he ran so well in Oaklawn, certainly we were considering this race, but there was a chance that Maxfield might be the one that was going to come and we weren't going to send them both. Then all of a sudden Maxfield turned out to go to Santa Anita and it left the door open and everything just kind of fell into place. Mystic Guide ran so well, look like an obvious candidate for this race, and here we are.
So when your horse got picked, what were the first emotions that you felt, basically, you know, first time you're coming out of the country, probably?
Well, I mean, certainly I've been training over 40 years and watching this for 24 years and always, you know, being impressed and amazed by, you know, the whole presentation over here and the prestige of the race. And always dreaming that one day, you know, I might have a horse that would come, and the day has come, and it's just very gratifying to be here.
Okay, Mikey.
A couple things. First, now that you've looked and seen the other fields and had a feel for the place, do you see any other horses in your barn that you could have brought as well?
No. I mean, we really didn't have anything else. Certainly, if there were other horses that would have fit, we would have considered it. But we didn't really have the right horse to bring, so he was the only one that we decided on.
And with the post he has, and you know, drawn in the middle, and he's probably, you know, to be two or three lengths back. He has a grinding style, it seems, where you has to really get into it around the 3 furlong pole. Do you give Luis any instructions at all when it comes to the race? Do you tell him to make sure he moves at a certain time? You know, how do you approach the race when you do your studying?
Well, I mean, the only important thing to me is going to be breaking and getting a clean break, mm-hmm. putting himself in a comfortable spot early. That's going to be the most important part. And then I let Saez take over from there. I mean, he's a very capable rider and one of the top riders in the United States. And I leave that to him. But certainly the break is going to be important. As, you know, we found out with horses like Arrogate and that if you don't break well, you're up against it.
And lastly, you've had multiple Grade 1 winners and you've been in the Breeders' Cup multiple times. Compare the pressures of this experience with those.
Well, I mean, obviously the Breeders' Cup is on a world stage as this is, but, you know, like I say, training for Godolphin and Sheikh Mohammed, being here for the 25th anniversary, it has a little special flavor to it. And like I say, it's an amazing thing to be here and just really, really happy that I could be the one that brings the horse over.
Well, mate, your horse has certainly looked great out on the track this week. These international contenders helped make the Dubai World Cup what it is, so we wish you all the very best for Saturday.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My thanks to the Dubai Racing Club who made those feeds available to the media this week. Mike Stidham, always classy, always humble. All the best to him coming up with Mystic Guide in the Dubai World Cup, post time 12:40 Eastern. Make sure you're locked into that one. One final break. I'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 graded stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judd Mott Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park will reopen on a limited basis to the general public beginning Friday, April 2nd, with the Grade 1 $750,000 Run Happy Santa Anita Derby highlighting a blockbuster card on Saturday, April 3rd. Please visit santaanita.com for details, and if possible, make plans to join us in person. And don't forget, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Our main event this Saturday will go as our ninth and final race, the Grade 3 $100,000 Santa Ana Stakes. First post time is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest at 11:50 a.m. as they analyze each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. wrapping up a very busy 3 hours for you here this morning. Hope you enjoyed the show. My thanks to Kip Elzer from Kirkwood, Gatewood Bell from Keeneland, Jared Burdine, Kieran McLaughlin, Ron Nicoletti, Bob Edwards, and, of course, that clip from Mike Stidham you just heard a short time ago for making this show possible. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Gave you a couple of options. Who wins today's Kirtland, Florida Derby? Greatest honor, the morning line favorite and the likely favorite at post time, or the field? You can take anybody else. It's gone back and forth throughout the morning, but 51% of you right now taking greatest honor, 49% saying it's the field. It's close. It's going to be close for the remainder of the voting. Again, keep them coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Follow the road to the Kentucky Derby, plus have the latest breeding, sales, and racing and industry news and analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up. Both of those, by the way, are free. A couple of updates from Dubai. Two group races already in the books. Again, the Dubai World Cup at 12:40 Eastern. The Godolphin Mile was run just after we came on the air this morning at 8 o'clock Eastern. British bred Secret Ambition getting the victory there. And just a little while ago, the Alquaz Sprint went to an American, Extravagant Kid, for trainer Brendan Walsh, jockey Ryan Moore. Congratulations to them. He won by a half a length. So, great connections, happy for them in the Alquaz Sprint and Extravagant Kid. Whew, busy morning. Thanks for being with me for the full 3 hours. My thanks to Lee Delapina in our Lexington studios for pushing all the right buttons and making things sound good, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. I'm back next week with another edition of the Equine Forum, and you can follow me all week long. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and podcasts of all of our shows. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers.